nope, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Please enter your security code.
Access. Brandon. Calibrate digital audio.
Press it. Equalize it. Add that curve.
Set up. Complete. Initiate transmission.
Democratic Radio is on the air now.
God bless America.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Now, here's Guy James.
Good evening and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of gorgeous Fort Myers in Naples area, Florida. Glad to have all of you with us this week in what has been a historic week in American history. I don't think any one story has ever captivated the American public as much as this has. Even 9/11, it seems sometimes to me. And I'd be interested to know how you feel about that. It almost seems like the 9/11 story has taken second place in terms of importance of the story to what we're going through right now. An amazing time in American history. A lot of talk about what's going on right now. A lot of disappointment, a lot of anguish. Terror, you name it, every emotion, fear. Even people that weren't there have gone to bed crying at night here in America. And I've got so many things to talk about tonight. We won't get to all of them, I'm sure. There's so many things, so many questions all of us have about what is happening in the New Orleans area and the Northern Gulf Coast. And to top things all off here, we have the vulture oil companies coming along to profit off of this very sad chapter in American history. They're always there to make record profits. We're going to talk about that a little later as well. Many questions a lot of you have brought up. People couldn't get into New Orleans, and yet reporters got in. Bush got in. No food or water for 4 days, and a big story there, the Department of Homeland Security. What do you think of that now? Is it the bureaucratic nightmare that I see it to be? Most certainly. The obvious racial situation that was played up on the media, I am sick at heart, absolutely sick at heart, of some of the things I saw this week pertaining to racial issues. And, of course, here, speaking of people that there are vultures that are around here, we've got our good old friends, Halliburton. The government went so slow this week on so many things, but they wasted no time getting Halliburton a new contract to fix up the naval facilities that were damaged. Oh, no. Got right at that, of course. And then there's one of our heroes, many of our heroes that listen to those of you that listen to this program, Al Gore, the man who should have been president of the United States. And that I will always claim was elected president of the United States, gets a plane brought into New Orleans, comes in with it himself to haul 150 of the most critical patients out. Thanks, Al. Thanks for somebody doing something. I, along with many of you, have experienced a lot of doubt this week. Doubts that I could properly talk about this horrible disaster that's befallen the Northern Gulf Coast, and I really feel that no one person can possibly describe the devastation in terms that really do it justice. We've all watched it all week long. And it's a case where you literally cannot believe your eyes when you see the awful destruction wrought by Mother Nature. And moreover, how can one describe the utter terror, the fear, the pain and sorrow, and the sense of hopelessness that the residents of that area must be feeling right now? And how do you endure the cries of your own children crying out because of hunger and thirst while being so helpless to do anything about it? How do you watch all of your belongings disappear right before your eyes, washed away by the torrent of floodwaters, your home rendered uninhabitable because of the raging wind or the rising water? How unimaginable it is to think of neighbors being washed away by the storm surge, never to see them again. And as I'm sure most of you saw, how does a man and his small child carry on after having the wife and mother torn away from your arms by the violent waters and drown? It makes one wonder, how strong is the human spirit when tested almost beyond endurance? How strong is the will to live when hope seems lost? Many, many thousands of our brothers and sisters have been wiped out by this awful hurricane, and many have lost their lives, and after seeing the aftermath of the storm, some would say they were the lucky ones not to have to witness what was once a civil society descend into chaos and near primal conditions. It seems that no one left behind after the evacuation was spared, but as usual, it was the poor whose suffering was the most traumatic and extensive, and it was those who didn't have the money to leave town, who couldn't afford the gas, or didn't have a decent car or anywhere to go where it wouldn't require a lot of money, that they just didn't have. And with no decent contingency plan ready for such folks, what were they to do? Make no mistake about it, those people you see walking waist-deep in the filthy waters of New Orleans are not the affluent, nor are most of them the law-breaking looters shown over and over again on TV. No, for the most part, they're just good law-abiding poor folks who got caught in an impossible situation, a situation that was not, by any stretch of the imagination, properly managed by state, local, and federal authorities. It seems almost impossible to believe that rescue and relief efforts couldn't have been more timely and comprehensive. To see over 500 people, for example, stranded on top of an overpass for 4 days without water or food is unthinkable. The scenes from inside the convention center were beyond words. And again, it's impossible to believe that relief efforts couldn't have been better organized to prevent these inhumane conditions that no person within the borders of the richest, most advanced nation on earth should have to suffer. You know, before Hurricane Katrina, who would ever thought that this wonderful city of New Orleans would suffer so much? Of course, many people thought this kind of storm would devastate New Orleans, but I doubt anyone ever dreamed so much human suffering would take place, for it was really impossible to think this kind of havoc could take place in that friendly city so full of the very best kind of southern charm and hospitality. I've always said that if you want to see the true South, you've got to visit two cities. You got to visit and fully experience Charleston, South Carolina, and New Orleans, Louisiana. Charleston rebuilt itself after Hurricane Hugo. But this storm was no Hugo. It was many times worse, and the question remains, will New Orleans survive this calamity? And I think it's going to be a while before we know the answer to that question. And in the meantime, we've all got to be ready to help in whatever way we can. The area close to where I'm speaking to you from suffered a terrible tragedy last year, and there was an enormous outpouring of help from all over the country. New Orleans, the Gulfport, Biloxi, Mississippi areas are going to need many, many times more help than did our area after Hurricane Charley. We can just wait and see if America's up to the task of nursing one of her own back to good health. I think she is. I think she is. What do you think? So much to talk about tonight, and I hope you'll join us. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. I don't know. There's so much to talk about this evening. You wonder where to start. And along with many of you on TV, I watched, back in August. I watched TV back on August the 2nd. And many of you remember this, the National Weather Service issued a general warning that we need to expect major storms to hit our southern coast area during this year, this long hurricane season. You know, and one would think that knowing this, the President of the United States, be he Republican or Democrat, would have immediately called in directors of FEMA, the Homeland Security, and every other pertinent organization, and ordered them to develop an operational contingency plan in case of a natural disaster like we are currently experiencing. Quite obviously, that was not done. And most certainly, the federal government cannot expect the local government, like New Orleans or any other city in the United States, to be fully prepared for what was brought upon them. Going to need federal help every time in something like this. And didn't somebody remind the powers that be that the folks along the Gulf Coast had been stripped of Black Hawk helicopters needed for rescue operations in a natural disaster situation? Did anybody mention that? I mean, come on. All of we civilians knew all about the possible flooding that could happen in New Orleans. Everybody knew, except for those responsible for helping in the aftermath. How could it possibly happen that it took so long for government agencies to get mobilized? Why weren't staging areas developed in the area a day or two ahead of the storm? Everybody in the world knew a massive storm was going to hit that area. Why didn't mobilization begin before the storm happened? Why weren't food, water, and sanitation supplies loaded and ready to move in right after the storm? Can anybody explain this to me? No one has. Really, don't explain it to me. Explain it to the family members of those whose lives who were needlessly lost. Explain it to those who were dying of thirst and dehydration and lack of needed medical supplies. Most of this rescue operation looked like it was being run by the Keystone Cop. Thank God for the Coast Guard. They were on the ball. Seems no one else was. Let's go to the phone. Hi, Julio.
Hey, what's going on, guy? Guy, I'm like besides myself, so I hope you give me a minute to let me express myself. I mean, watching the video of these people on top of that bridge and in front of that convention center, you know, it made me think of the movie Titanic. After the ship was starting to sink, and all the rich people are on the boat, and they get far enough away where they can still hear the people screaming, and they refuse to go back because they're afraid that the people are going to pull the boat down away from them. And then finally, when they do have the balls to go back there and search for survivors, most of them are dead already. And yeah, there's a lot of survivors, but how many people are dead now? For what reason? You know what I'm saying? Like, I refuse to believe that if something like this happened in Beverly Hills, that they wouldn't have had the Navy there, okay, ready to get those people out of those buildings. You know, and if you go back to the election, okay, for over a year, you know, Kerry's slogan was a stronger America. Edwards' slogan was two Americas, one for rich people, one for poor people. And for over a year, all they kept telling us was that Bush has stripped our cities of the ability to be able to respond to disasters, that all of our resources are in Iraq, that we are not stronger for a terrorist attack. We are more vulnerable to an attack. Mayors, Republican and Democrats, got together, held conferences telling the federal government that we are not ready for a catastrophic event. If something like this happens, we would not be able to respond. You know, and just to think, just to close your eyes and think for a second, what this, I mean, I don't even want to use the word. What this man must have been doing on Monday and Tuesday, okay, while people were dying, before a light bulb went off in his head, that, you know what? Something serious is going on. Maybe I better go back to work and find out what's going on. You know, and it's unimaginable to me that this man is the President of the United States. As far as I'm concerned, he shouldn't be impeached. He should resign.
Absolutely. I completely agree, Julio. You know, there's a lot of people saying we should not be pointing fingers right now. What are we supposed to do? Yes, we're all doing our part to help those as much as we can, and for most of us, it's just financially is all that we can do.
Everybody wondered, what was the big deal about him sitting on a stool for 7 minutes after he was told that the country was under attack? The point was that he was told that the country was under attack, and he did nothing, okay? And now, I mean, days it took. I mean, I'm thinking, how can you not be watching a video of dead children on the street, dead old people on the street, dead people in general, and you not, you know, look at the camera and say, You know what? Why don't we send helicopters there where those people are? Get those people out of there now. The fact that it would take that long to get those people there. And you know what? The fact, as a minority myself, I'm offended because that could be me on top of that bridge. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
The fact that it's all black people up there, and it's undeniable. It's all black people up there in front of the convention center, and from there you can rationalize it however you want to, but that is the cold, basic fact, that those people were left behind, and once people start rationalizing that, you see where they really come from. People like Bill O'Reilly saying that, well, they're looting. Please, I didn't see anybody shooting reporters. If it was that bad, why weren't they trying to beat up the reporters, take their cameras,
well,
their fuel?
Bill O'Reilly. First of all, he's nothing but a sexual pervert. Secondly, Bill O'Reilly made the statement that he felt that most of them stayed behind so they could do some good looting after the storm was over. What a reprehensible thing to say, by a very reprehensible man, I might add.
Oh, no, these people are real scumbags, and what this exposes everybody for who they truly are. And you can really see who are the people who have infiltrated our country to get power for certain types of people, people like Hannity, people like Limbaugh, O'Reilly. I kind of have turned on Michael Savage a little bit, where he's just nuts, but he is not. You can tell that he's not involved in this game that these people are playing. Okay, for Hannity to sit there and say that it's only Democrats talking, it's only Democrats pointing fingers. Newt Gingrich is not a Democrat. Neither is Joe Scarborough, neither is Tucker Carlson, neither is Michael Savage. None of these people. And it goes back to the same thing. They know they're in trouble, so the only thing they can do is try and make liberals look as bad as they can. And the only thing I would say to that, it's just funny to me when something like this happens, how liberal the country has become all of a sudden.
Absolutely.
All of a sudden, liberalism isn't such a bad thing. You don't see people saying, let those people get on with their lives by themselves. Let them pull themselves up by the bootstraps.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you know, in the case of 9/11, we didn't see 9/11 coming. You know, Bush didn't see it coming. He reacted so terribly poorly afterwards, but I didn't see it coming. We saw this 9/11 coming.
Can I just say one thing about
yeah.
that? I heard Hannity talk about that, criticizing the mayor of New Orleans, saying that he's no Rudy Giuliani. Okay, Rudy Giuliani did not have his entire police force taken out by terrorists. Okay, he did not have the fire department taken out by terrorists. Terrorists did not blow up New York City. They knocked down a couple of buildings. Okay, this is an entire coast of the United States. For anyone to actually think that the mayor of one city has the ability to respond to that when all of his resources were washed away by a flood, what the hell did they expect him to do? And like
exactly
I said,
right.
what could possibly have this man been doing for 2 days? What was he doing? I would like to know. I'd like someone to ask him, what the hell exactly were you doing for 2 days before it finally hit you? You know what? Maybe we should go down there and do something. Maybe, you know, something is wrong here. And it's like, if people can't see it now, what this man has done to this country, they will never see it. And that scares me more than anything else.
If you can't see it now, you're a blind man. That's all there is. If you can't realize at this moment in time in American history, that this man is totally incompetent to be in the White House, then there's no hope for you. Julio, thank you. I have to
move on.
Thanks very much. I'm going to go to Tom in Naples. Hi, Tom.
Hi. You know, it's easy to pick on George Bush, and I wouldn't vote for him again. But that's not the issue, and whether or not he did anything for 2 days isn't the issue. This is something that...
Tom, are you there? Ah. Tom, call us back. Sorry about that. Call us back. Don't know what happened there. We'll get Tom right back on the phone. Give us a call right back, Tom, okay? We're going to go to Mike in San Jose, California. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Guy. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, I want to call about this Kanye West thing.
Heard it last night. Saw it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I was telling Ron when I called in, what offended me was when they cut over to Chris Tucker and it was obvious that the guy had been censored in mid-sentence. The other thing, Mike Myers standing there like a little rag doll reading off the teleprompter. You know, like I said to Ron, yes, Myers gets points for showing up and wanting to do something and trying to help, but he just looked so crestfallen in the presence of a guy who spoke what was on his mind that it bothered me a bit, you know?
Isn't it refreshing to see somebody tell it like it is instead of stand there and be a politically correct little doll standing there?
Well, and the thing, you know, if I could be standing face-to-face with Mr. West right now, the thing that I'd tell him is that he's got it right on one hand, but what I think he really needs to understand is that if you're not a pioneer and you're not a ranger, Bush doesn't care about you, and that transcends skin color. He cares about people who can do things for him, and, yeah, he may have his hierarchy start at the brown-skinned people and work their way up the ladder. But it's not about race with him. It's about what you can do for him financially and otherwise. And if you're not of use to him, then you're just collateral.
You're very right, Mike. And you know, as we're going to get back to Tom a second in the phone, it's not about a blame game. It's about the safety of the United States of America we're talking about here. We've got someone driving the bus without a license. We've got a guy at the helm of the ship that doesn't know a damn thing about which way the wind is blowing. We've got a man in charge who doesn't have a clue. We have to rid ourselves of leadership like this, and I don't care if he's a Democrat or a Republican. I've got a beef with the Democrats over this too, and you're going to hear about it later on. But we've got to talk. We've got to talk this out, and we've got to make sure that we don't end up with a debacle like this on our hands again.
Yeah, one more thing, Guy, and I'll let you go.
Yes.
The photo that I'm sure you've seen of Bush hugging the two sisters in Biloxi, there's the threat on Democratic Underground, and it's ripe for discussion that not only was it a photo op, but these girls don't even live there. They were visiting or something, and they were hand-selected for the photo op.
Hand-selected, so, interviewed, had the fake food line set up as soon as Bush walked away. They tore it down and went to the next photo op with it. It was a disgusting scene.
Yep. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tom, sorry we lost you. You're back.
Well, all right. You know, the thing that I want to point out is that all of us, I'm a pretty old guy, been around a long time, and we all know about government. We all know about the military. If you've been in the military, you know what a word snafu is.
Yep.
It's always, a situation normal is always this way. And Americans love to gripe and throw the blame game out. I mean, you're making your living picking on George Bush.
I don't make a living doing
and
this.
And the thing, well, what?
No, let's stop right there. We
okay.
do this for no money.
You don't have to defend yourself. I'm just going to make
all
a
right.
point, and then I'll let you go on. To go on and rant and rave about the failings of one man in government is an absolute exercise in futility. This is the failings of we're supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and we the people have let that go maybe 50, 100 years ago. And the people in this country are slovenly, and they don't think as individuals. They think as a social group. They are taught to think in a collective way by the public schools and by the government thing. Every one of those people in New Orleans has spent their entire life looking for government to lead them wherever they're going to go.
Now, that's not a fair statement.
That is a fair statement.
That's not a fair statement. You
it
cannot make
it,
you cannot make a statement that every one of those people is beholden to the government. You can't say that.
Listen to what I'm saying, please.
I heard you say that every one. Did you not say that every one of those people would depended on the government?
Everyone from all the way to the top, all the way to black, white, it doesn't make any difference. New Orleans has always been the big easy, the good old boys of the days of the populace, where the fat cats are going to use the people in the slums to stay in power. It's the Democrat way of doing things. The Republicans have now adopted it very well. The American way is to get, just like the Romans, to get the mob out there and control the mob in order to stay in power. We've allowed this to happen in this country, and everything that happens from 9/11 to this is predictable. Government will never be efficient. If there was efficiency, they would have built the dikes up years ago and changed New Orleans around because they knew this back in the 1920s.
They have known it for a long
time.
That's
right, but it's the way things are. We are a bunch of slovenly, lazy people for the most part who want government to do all their thinking. It takes a village. It's not true. Government should be run by people who select good quality representatives to run it. It should not be run by people who love to govern for the power of governing and people out there who want handouts.
So it doesn't take a village.
No, it doesn't take a village. It takes schools that teach individuality and responsibility first.
And the schools are and who puts the schools together?
Well, the tax money can. I don't like it, but it can. I mean, it's the greatest waste of tax money in the world, the public schools we have now.
Oh, come on, Tom.
Oh, please.
Oh, come on.
A bunch of union people with their hands out there.
Tom, did you go to a private school, Tom?
No.
Neither did I.
I went to a public school.
Got a great education.
You know what? I got a great education on my own after going into the military as a kid in Korea.
And so you didn't get an education at the public school.
I just want you to listen.
Hey, this is my show, Tom. You can listen to me, and I can listen to you back and forth.
You got the rest of the night to tell your audience.
Tom, I don't like your attitude. You're cutting down the public schools in this country. You're jumping on the Republican bandwagon, and I'm surprised you're not calling them government schools like the rest of them do.
I'm
not playing politics with it. The public schools have a place in this country. The public schools built this country. Without the public schools, this country, we'd be like Sri Lanka without our public school system.
My last point.
You didn't make your last one very well. If you're going to be one of those that says the public schools shouldn't be around.
Hang on, and you know, tighten yourself down and just do a little.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're just a little too much for me, Tom.
Well,
you're a little too rude. You're a little too rude and too offensive. Goodbye. Goodbye, Tom. You're a little too rude and offensive. If you want to call and you want to make a point, you do so. But we're going to have a two-way conversation on this phone, like I've said many times before. And if we don't have a two-way conversation, we're not going to have a conversation at all. Sound like Neil Bortz, didn't he? The public schools are no good? I think we're going to pause for a break right now. And it's that time. And Ron's saying it's time, so we're going to do that, and we'll be right back after this.
This is the Guy James Radio Network.
All in one. If not, you may want to consider changing design firms. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at J2KProductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, Productions.com. Driven to succeed.
We at the Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Heather Wilkes, Mesa, Arizona. Elaine Miller, Newton, Iowa. Virginia Miller, Newton, Iowa. Dr. Irvin Winsboro, Fort Myers, Florida. Valerie Cribbs, Cherry Valley, California. Michael Bradley, Austin, Texas. Steve Brodkin, North Fort Myers, Florida. Ben and Suzanne Williams, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Chris Kern, Hudson, Florida. And Mark Mehef, Reno, Nevada. To join the growing list of those that support the Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them?
Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring 'em on. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, he'll be on your own. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. You got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. And this is too much for them to die alone. in some land that they don't know about. Every day I get scared. I just want to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
Do you have a business or product that might benefit from a little national attention?
You're going to like this.
Are you interested in having Guy James talk about your product or service?
Well, this is it.
Contact Gene Charles today at 239-405-0355 or online at GuyJames@TheGuyJamesShow.com.
Helpful marketing tip number 302. Even though you may be paying for full color, the average person can only assimilate four or five easily. Rather than swashing every word, header, or border in every variation of every color in the rainbow, try choosing two or three solid colors, either
The phone lines are open. Call 1-888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04 right now. And chime in. You're on the Guy James Show.
You want to know why I'm upset? You want to know why I'm upset? One of the reasons I'm upset, I know some of my listeners have know about what I'm about to tell you, but somebody sent me this text this afternoon, and I read it, and I went, wow. That's not true. I know that's not true. That cannot be true. So I went to the site and looked at it for myself, and it is true. Listen to this. On the American Red Cross website, and it states, the state Homeland Security Department had requested and continues to request that the American Red Cross not come back into New Orleans following the hurricane. Our presence would keep people from evacuating and encourage others to come into the city. This is why I want to point the finger. This is why I want to hold somebody accountable. This is why Michael Chertoff should be thrown out on his ass right now. I wouldn't wait for this to be over with. He deserves to go right now. I understand the governor of Louisiana did hire James Witt, Clinton's FEMA director. Let's just see. I told you earlier we're going to have some good guests this evening, and I've got one on the phone right now. We've got a great lady on the phone right now by the name of Gail Smith, and Gail is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, an organization in Washington that we talk to quite often. And she has much to say about the events of this past week, and we're going to let her fill you in on it. Gail, are you
ready? Hi, how you doing?
Thanks, and welcome to the program. We are, of course, discussing the events of this past week, and I know you've had a lot to say about it. That's how we ended up talking to you about it. And Gail, what's your take on this past week?
Well, I think like everyone else, I'm just obsessed by it. It's one of the most stunning and shocking events I've ever seen in this country. I think the things that strike me are two. I've worked a lot of relief operations around the world over the last 20 years, and I have to say I've never seen a response that was as poorly managed as this one, and I don't understand it. I've said that in other forums. I think there are a number of things that still need to be done and could be done. It's just hard to understand why they're not happening.
Well, average Joe sitting at home watching TV, guys that are not trained in rescue operations and come up with many, many, many perfectly good questions that I can't supply. You know, they email me and ask me the questions, and I have no answer for them. For example, when all the buses came in to the Superdome the other day, they'd had no food and water at the Superdome, and all these buses came in, they came in empty.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that nobody was on first. And shocking to me, I mean, this is unprecedented in the United States, but there have been crises like this in other parts of the world, and there's some kind of standard operating procedure. For example, one of the things you have to do in the first 24 hours is set up an information system. Whether you're on bullhorns or dropping leaflets or where you can going over radio to tell people what's going to happen. I think one of the reasons we saw the panic is that people had no idea whether they were ever going to see help. So that didn't happen. I mean, I think that it certainly looks to me that FEMA has dropped the ball in a big way. I think there are a lot of great individuals on the ground out there. The one positive thing, I think, over the last 48 hours is that General Russ Honore that was sent in is somebody I worked with a few years ago on the Mozambique floods, and he's somebody who's very serious and very capable. But the president should have gotten him in, you know, Saturday night, Sunday morning last week.
That's one of the things I have not been able to figure. Why, knowing this this terrible storm was coming, didn't they have things staged somewhere in the vicinity where, you know, help was able to come in soon?
Well, I mean, again, what should have happened here is when it became clear that this was going to be a Category 4 or 5 storm, there's modeling that had been done by FEMA under James Lee Witt that predicted what would happen, and there should have been an emergency contingency plan drawn up last Friday night. Now, even that wouldn't have given much time, but a number of these things should have been teed up and ready to go. We should have been ready to deploy the military last weekend because we shouldn't have been surprised by this, and I think that's what's stunning. The other thing that is stunning, and again, this is evident to a lot of people but seems to surprise some people in Washington, a lot of people in the media, is that crises like this hit the poorest the hardest. And there are ways that we should have prepared for that. And I think that in the long term, that's been the most stunning thing to see. This has just forced some very big contradictions in our society to the fore.
Well, we've had the controversy all week long from some of the talking heads on the right side of the dial, the right wing people talking about how these people should have gotten out of town, they shouldn't have been there. They, you know, we know full well that many of these folks could not leave town.
Right.
We know that many of them could not afford to leave town. We know many of them couldn't physically leave town. And then trying to put the blame on these folks, and even accused. I heard a couple of the talkers saying that, well, they figure most of them stayed behind so they could do some good looting when things got bad. Terrible, terrible things to say.
Yeah, but the other thing that's interesting but I find troubling is this reference to people in New Orleans as refugees.
Yes.
Technically a refugee is somebody who crosses an international border, but by calling them refugees, I think there's a real danger in making it sound like there's them and then there's us.
Yes.
And the people affected in this crisis is us. I'm sure like many of your listeners, my jaw drops about every 15 minutes.
Well, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe we're watching events taking place in the United States of America. I know you were based in Africa for a long time, and
right.
you saw things in very, very poor countries there. Terrible events like this, and one might expect to see some problems like that in some of our poorer third world nations, but not in the richest, most advanced nation in the world.
Well, you wouldn't expect that. One of the other things I've wondered about, quite frankly, is that although FEMA seems to have failed here, we do have an agency within the U.S. government that's very good at this. In the U.S. Agency for International Development, there's something called the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance, and it's full of expert teams that deploy into crises like this and know how to make rapid assessments, know how to call in tents and field hospitals and water bladders and all kinds of things. Had I been advising President Bush, which is unlikely, but nonetheless had I, I would have suggested that he pull the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance in. They're great, well-trained, and capable people. I'm not sure it became evident to him until midweek that there was a real crisis here.
I think you're right. I think they were a day late and a dollar short before he even realized it. Many, many reasons. You know, we can't blame this administration for a storm hitting, certainly not, but it's just the way it was handled was, I think it's really added to the body count, and by the time this is all totaled up, this is going to be a staggering amount of loss of human life, and it's something that in many cases it just did not have to be.
Well, it didn't have to be, and there's a Chapter 2 coming which is going to be at least as important, and that is that, as is no surprise to anybody at this point, these people have no insurance, no savings, no jobs, no homes. And I think as a country we've got two choices here. We can just try to sustain them for a while and then say, well, you're on your own. Or we can say, wait a minute, here are people who live so far below the poverty line that they didn't have the capacity to come out of this with anything. They didn't have the capacity to get out of town. So what do we do now to invest in these people, not just so we get them to the level where next time there's a hurricane they're going to see a repeat of this, but so they've got some real sustainability and wherewithal to move forward, but move forward in a better condition than they were when this hurricane hit. And I think that's our next challenge, and I just hope that we'll rise to the occasion.
And we've even seen a couple of our politicians suggest that, well, maybe we shouldn't rebuild New Orleans. I think anybody that would say that wouldn't have an understanding of just how important that city is to America and to the world, as a matter of fact, as a seaport and to the Midwest for the ability to ship the grain out of there and so forth. It's a far, far more important city than most people think. It's not just a place for gambling and Bourbon Street and all that.
Well, I also think when somebody's just lost their home, the message you want to send them is not, well, it's probably not worth rebuilding. Whether it's New Orleans or Chicago or some small town in the outskirts of Washington, D.C., that's not what you need to be saying to people right now. What politicians need to be saying to these people is not, we're all doing a great job, we're here for you, but here's what we're going to do, here's what's going to happen next. We're going to be with you for the long haul, because this is going to take years to overcome.
Yes, most certainly it is. I think that's apparent to everybody now. At first we thought, you know, after the storm was immediately over, before the floodwaters came in, everybody's breathing a sigh of relief, and they're like, well, good, we'll get this town back to normal in no time, and it's just not going to happen. It's one of the great tragedies in American history. I was buoyed today by the fact that the governor of Louisiana has hired James Witt, Clinton's FEMA director, to help in the situation, a man who's highly experienced and has been through some tragedies, not quite to this extent, but I think he's going to be of great help in the situation.
He's an extraordinary man, James Lee Witt. He's extremely capable. He was in the media a little bit in the first 48 hours after this. If you notice, he's been very quiet since then. I'm sure he's just gotten down to work in Louisiana. He really knows what he's doing. This is the work he's been doing since he left government when Clinton left office. But he is really spectacular, and I think the state of Louisiana will do very well to have him on their side as they try to move forward. He's really talented.
Well, having studied this sort of thing in your past, especially on the African continent and so forth, where do you see a start now to pull up our bootstraps and get going again and get this city back on the map? What has to be done?
Well, there are a number of things. I mean, at a practical level, there's still a lot more that's got to be put into Louisiana and Mississippi in terms of relief infrastructure, because the notion of taking out everybody on the entire Gulf Coast and moving them to Illinois or Texas is not viable. So there's much more in an operational sense that needs to be done very quickly, things like surveillance on the medical side, because with all of the by now absolutely toxic water, there's a real danger of cholera and other diseases. At a sort of theoretical level, in terms of a good relief operation and planning for the long term, one of the most important things that needs to happen right now is to find a way to enlist people in their own recovery. We're not going to be doing people any service if we send people in there and then just turn the people who've been hit by this, and I don't mean in New Orleans, I mean all along that coastline, into passive victims. There's a lot of cleanup to do. There is a lot of rebuilding to do. Those people are ready and willing to work. They should be paid a wage to work. It's a way to help them get back on their feet. So I think there's a really big challenge in that. In the relief operations I've worked around the world, those that build the way, if you will, for development down the road, more stability down the road, are those that, again, pull in the people who've been affected and make them part of the solution rather than making them sort of pathetic, dependent victims. And so I think that's something we really need to do and really need to watch for over the coming weeks.
Well, that seems to me to be something that we have not done in another area of the world right now, that the United States has a big commitment, and it seems like in Iraq we haven't done that at all. We haven't enlisted the Iraqi people to help rebuild their own country, and I think that's hurting us quite a bit in that effort.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, again, my jaw keeps falling to the floor. I look at Iraq, which was in enough trouble before this happened. Now gas prices going through the roof, a budget that really can't withstand any more overspending, but is going to have to tolerate it because obviously the federal government needs to support the rebuilding and the relief effort in every way possible.
And yet we have our president the other day, just yesterday, saying, hey, don't worry about it. We've got unlimited resources. We can do anything we want to. I think there are limits, and this is
I think there are limits, and the thing that is missing, I think it was missing after 9/11. It was missing even in Iraq. It's missing now, is to ask people to make some sacrifice. I think that every American watching this crisis would be quite prepared to say, I will send X dollars a month. I will not drive my car one day a week. I will help my community absorb some of these kids that need to go to school. I mean, I think people
yes.
are quite ready to make a sacrifice.
Yes.
And the message that I fear in terms of all the challenges this country faces, as rich as we are and as powerful as we are, is that if we continue marching into the future with this notion that we can always succeed without having to make any sacrifice, give anything, invest of ourselves or our time, this is just going to be one in a long line of problems. And I'm stunned that, again, we've not heard anything about that.
That's a great statement. I heartily agree. Gail, it's so good to have had you on the program this evening. I thank you so much for joining us. You've added a lot to the conversation. I know we'll be discussing things you had to say for the rest of the evening.
Well, I'm delighted to be on.
It's always good to have folks on from the American Progress group, and we've had quite a few guests from your organization and have great respect. And so thanks, Sam, and all the whole gang. And
all righty, will do.
Much appreciation.
Thank you.
Gail Smith, pretty much an expert. She's spent a lot of time in Africa. She has seen many, many things like this over the years. And the heartbreak that it brings to the community, amazing. Let's go to Robert in Cape Coral. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Guy. How are you doing?
Good.
Guy, I want to read you a brief letter that I wrote to all my friends this Friday. And I said, as I watched in horror the last few days' events unfolding in New Orleans, I have refrained from commenting, awaiting for the appropriate government response. At this time, I can no longer hold my tongue. I have military medical experience, having served in the Florida Army National Guard and the United States Air Force. I am familiar with disastrous procedures. My family and I personally went through Hurricane Andrew and served my community during that disaster. I'm also a member of the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, a volunteer organization with 30,000 members dedicated to the support of the Coast Guard mission. Our members are trained in all the Coast Guard functions except for law enforcement and combat. Many of our members own boats that are routinely used in search and rescue operations. We have disaster plans, and our units are self-supporting. Coast Guard auxiliaries nationwide have been volunteering their services in boats, and these resources go unused. I myself have a 21-foot boat, ideal and fully equipped for search and rescue. My crew consists of a dentist, a pediatrician, a surgeon, and a boat and auto mechanic. At this moment, we sit idle, awaiting for orders, while we listen to the desperate pleas from New Orleans officials for boats. I'm also a member of the Florida Medical Reserve Corps, a group that receives government money to train and serve in disaster situations. Again, we have not been activated. This is just a small example of the lack of response of the federal government. I encourage you, my friends, to email and call your elected officials and show your outrage at this inhumane treatment of our brothers and sisters in the Gulf Coast, specifically the residents of New Orleans, who need the most immediate rescue.
Well, Robert, I heartily agree with everything you've said, and my hat's off to the Coast Guard. My God, as events unfolded there this week.
But you know, Guy, the Coast Guard Auxiliary, the volunteers that are ready to go back and to ready and put their craft and themselves in harm's way to rescue these people, have not been activated by the federal government.
And
the poor guys that are there on the front line are doing a tremendous job. However, the federal government has not responded. And I will guarantee you, if this happened in a rich white suburb of Washington, D.C., or in Los Angeles in a rich white suburb, like somebody mentioned Beverly Hills, or if it happened in Naples, Florida, you would see everybody and his brother activated. And I think we need to stand up and have some backbone and call this what it is. It's racism, and it is the discrimination against the poor. These are not only black people, these are poor black people.
Yes, yes.
We need to stand up to that, and we need to admit it. We need to look ourselves in the mirror and realize that the government that we have elected is a racist, unfair government to poor people.
Well, the only
we
time...
We need to do some soul searching. And, you know, this the last lady who spoke to you, Gail, I think she's wonderful, but for her to be talking about sacrifice when one-third of the National Guard of the state of Louisiana is half a world away fighting a war based on lies by our president, when we have 150,000 of our troops over there trying to put together a country that is not really a country because Iraq is a country that was built by artificial borders by the British, which was a terrible mistake, and our president has an ignorance of geography and history and does not realize that. And we have 2,000 dead Americans over there. She's talking about sacrifice?
Well, I think she's coming at it from the sacrifice from all the citizens. Right now, the people of the armed forces are bearing the brunt of all this, and
so is everybody else.
Well, how much sacrifices are the fat cats of this country giving to this whole thing? They've had their taxes cut during a time of war. I know, having had a conversation with Gail yesterday, I know that's one of the things she's talking about. You're some fat cat that got no kids in this thing, and you got a nice tax cut, right? Right in the middle of Bush's war, you've offered nothing for this thing. That's the kind of sacrifice I know she was.
And those guys are not sacrificing, and they're not sacrificing now, and they're not even activating volunteers.
No.
They're looking to hire physicians over there. You know what, guy? You could not pay me to go over there. I wouldn't go into that muddy water for $1 million, but I would do it for free.
Yeah. Hey, Robert, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you for the time, guy.
Good to hear from somebody that's literally been there. Oh, where are we going to go in the phone here? We've got to go to, let's go to Andrea in Oklahoma. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
How are you today?
Well, I think along with a hell of a lot of other people, I'm distraught and wanting to scream at somebody, and I just don't know who.
Oh, don't scream at me.
No, but it won't be you. I want to know why there aren't more Democratic leaders screaming on TV about this. Al Sharpton was on today, and Jesse Jackson. And, of course, you know, the corporate media is trying to discredit them and saying that they shouldn't be pointing fingers or playing the race card. I tried to call. I called the Oklahoma governor's office on Wednesday when I realized that there were no helicopters hardly coming to help these people out. And on Thursday, I was going around my university trying to beg people to call our senators. And I'm a native of New Mexico, and I called the Democratic senator from there. And to tell you the truth, all I got was a bunch of BS political runaround. And I want to know where the outrage is in the mainstream media. I mean, it's there. It took, I hate to say it, it took Fox News to help these people get out.
Well, Andrew, let me ask you a question. As you know, I'm a liberal Democrat. I'm proud of it. Who are the Democratic leaders right now?
Well, we've got Howard Dean
in
charge of DLC. I would think that our Democratic leaders would be our senators, but they're not leading us.
No.
They're not doing a
not
damn
at all.
Thing.
Nothing.
And this goes beyond finger-pointing. You know, I wouldn't care who is in charge right now. Somebody is screwing people over, And the reason that it goes beyond figure pointing is because it's not just gross incompetence. This is criminal negligence.
Absolutely.
These people died
Absolutely.
Of thirst.
Yep.
Old people, babies, they're treated worse than animals. And at the same time, there's relief workers lined up on the borders trying to get in to help these people, and they're not allowed to go in.
And I heard a military officer today explaining why they couldn't take the C-130 aircraft and drop supplies in. I heard him explaining why we couldn't do that, and I'm thinking, you know, we have helicopters, don't we? He said he couldn't drop pallets of, and I'm thinking, well, you know, it'd be pretty easy to drop it in with, lower it down with a helicopter, but oh no.
Well, didn't we do that in Afghanistan?
We did it the very day we invaded. We dropped food to people in there. We had food and relief to people during the tsunami, for God's
That's
sake,
right.
in 4 days. 3 days after we invaded Iraq, we were dropping food to the people in Iraq, and yet we've got the poor black people in New Orleans that have starved and oh, I
don't even know how many people. people are still stuck, old people.
No idea.
People who can't get out, and we may never know. We may never know. And it's absolutely, I cannot even believe that this is going on.
You're absolutely right. It's the worst case of governmental criminal negligence that there's ever been in the history of this country. There's no question about it.
We knew it on TV. We've been watching it for days and days,
yeah.
And even the reporters who, you know, got...
But it's all better now because George Bush has been there, and he's going to go back again Monday and have another photo op. So I'm sure everybody down there is feeling a lot better that GW has been there and is going to come back again. Oh, my God.
Well, the thing is we need to stay on this corporate media because they are turning a little bit, and if they don't fall back into the spinning and allowing this administration to blatantly lie on television, if they'll do some damn journalistic work like they're supposed to be, things may be able to change.
Even Fox, even a couple of people on Fox wised up during this whole deal.
I watched it live last night when Geraldo was inside locked up with those people.
Yeah. Hey, I've got to go. We've got a break at the top of the hour, and I thank you for your very, very good call, Andrea. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Guy.
We've got a lot to talk about. We got a little bit of time to do it, a couple hours left in the show. I don't know where the first hour got to already, but it's gone. You're listening to Guy James Show, Wink, WNOG, Fort Myers in Naples, Florida.
You've been listening to The Guy James Show, America's number one democratic radio talk show, counteracting the melodrama and sarcasm of the radical right. All that's left is the truth. Stay tuned. More of The Guy James Show is on the way. This is The Guy James Show on Wink WNOG. Who says nothing good ever came out of the internet? You're at theguyjamesshow.com. Quit surfing the internet. All the training you'll ever need is right here. This is The Guy James Show.
Helpful marketing tip number 103. If you have a web designer, a graphic designer, and a search engine optimizer, you may be spending a lot more than you're making on your website. Remember that any web designer worth their salt is already an expert graphic designer and an SEO all in one. If not, you may want to consider changing design firms. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
Do you have a business or product that might benefit from a little national attention?
You're going to like this.
Are you interested in having Guy James talk about your product or service?
Well, this is it.
Contact Gene Charles today at 239-405-0355 or online at guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com. We at The Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported democratic radio talk show. Ann Ross, New York, New York. Luciano Rossetti, Cape Coral, Florida. Alice Knowlton, Milford, Massachusetts. Dave Goggin, Eureka, California. Annette Fenner, Marysville, Washington. Joe and Nancy Vogel, St. Paul, Minnesota. Juan Puerto, Fort Myers, Florida. Sarah Kay, Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Marcia Johns, Merritt Island, Florida. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
You have a product. You have a service. You want to tell people about your product or service, but you're afraid of being taken down a long road of expenses with no ride back. I'm Johnny Johnson, president of J2K, producers of The Guy James Show. Every week, we're called on to help businesses present their products and services to consumers by radio, video, and web. Businesses like yours. Visit us on the web at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
This might be our man. He's going to be very popular.
Get ready! Get set! Go! Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get calmed down.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Please enter your security code.
Access.
Calibrate digital audio.
Press it, equalize it, add that curve.
Set up. And we initiate transmission.
Democratic Radio is on the air now.
What you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Now here's Guy James.
And we're back, and we're glad to have you along with us this evening. We've got a couple of more hours left in the program, chock full of things to talk about. Let me ask you a question. Do you remember at the Republican convention last year when Rudy Giuliani was up on the stage and he said to the crowd, "I turned as I was talking to, I was walking down the street during 9/11. I turned to my police chief, Bernard Kerik, and said, 'Thank God George Bush is the president of the United States.' First of all, I think he's a liar. I can't believe that he said that. Secondly, let's go to my real point about that. Have you run into anybody who's saying, 'Thank God George Bush was president during Hurricane Katrina?'" Really? Have you? I'd like to know the answer to that one. I really would. I don't think there's ever been anything more incompetently handled in my lifetime as this has been. This has looked like something taking place from a third world country. Absolutely, absolutely looked like a third world country rescue effort to start off with. And now they're bragging about, well, we've got all these people in there now. Oh, sure. Got Jason in Lehigh. Hello, Jason.
Hey, how are you, Guy?
Good.
Good. Hey, I just want to make a quick comment. The guy you had on there from the National Guard who is serving, it's not a put-down to you or anything, but why are we waiting for a call? Why don't we just go in there, take our boats, and get off on the coast and just go in there and start rescuing people?
They won't let you in.
Well, there's the National Guard holding people out from the,
yes,
the outside, so they still are doing that.
Yes, they
time.
Are. You cannot enter the city. You got to get clearance and a pass to get in. I know of a group up on the northern Gulf Coast from the Florida Panhandle area that a group of almost 200 that went over with their boats, the size and the type that was needed. 200 got going over there, drove over with their boats, and all but three or four of them were turned away. They said they didn't need them. I don't understand. I mean, I don't have an answer to that. I don't know.
Is that maybe part of the TSA problem that we're having? Maybe they're worried about the security issues with at the time of the low threat of terrorism coming in. I mean, come on. I mean,
what more could they do to the city? Why would they worry about terrorists?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make sense to me unless it's just. I mean, there has to be a reason. There has to be some methodology. I know that we're never told anything directly from our government. Anytime there's really something going on.
Here's the answer, Jason. Here's the answer. Red tape. That's it. Red tape.
But now, Guy, it's not just Republicans' fault.
Absolutely not.
It's Democrats' fault, too. I think it's just people's fault. We put so much red tape. You're right, and I'm just going to go to that logistics. There's so much red tape involved in this. It's ridiculous.
But you know, you have people that just seem to say to hell with the red tape. You take Ed Rendell, for example. Rendell is the governor of this great state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And Ed Rendell called the governor of Mississippi,
yes,
Haley Barbour, one Democrat governor, one Republican governor, and says, I'm sending down 3,000 National Guard troops out of our state to yours. They didn't go ask anybody. He just said, I'm sending them, and he did. And I don't see a thing wrong with that.
No, I don't either. And it just, again, the empty buses, like you said earlier, it just doesn't make, something's not adding up right. And I feel really, really bad for the people, regardless, you know, they're making it out to a racial thing. I don't know about that. I'm not, you know, I don't know anything. I don't think it is. I think it's just so poorly, it's so traumatic, so huge that we're just so unorganized, so unplanned for something like this that we got caught, in, excuse the expression, with our pants down.
Oh, we did. And
it looks really bad for our country.
It looks very bad.
When Americans are doing what we're doing, we got those 200 boats standing by, and we got other boats standing by, and people wanting to go out there to help. That's the American spirit right there.
It is.
That's the key to our country. That's what makes us the best, is that people like us, I'm standing at home and telling my wife, I got to get, I'm a construction builder. I like to, you know, build homes. And I said, man, I know there's not much I can do in constructing right now, but I can at least cut through roofs. I can cut, you know, I can get my cut saw and go out there. And they're telling me, you can't go into the city, can't help.
Right. And they wouldn't even let the Red Cross in. So,
yeah,
you know.
It doesn't make sense. Something's not right. They're hiding something. It's being hidden. I don't know what it is. We'll find out later. I'm sure someone's going to write a book.
Well,
what about a guy?
There'd be a lot of books come out of this one. Thank you, Jason.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Bye now. Let's go to Diana in North Fort Myers. Hi, Diana.
Yeah, hi. I think that place up there is a toxic waste dump right now. I think they're worried because people are going to be ill, and that they don't want to cause a pandemic in America. I'm tired of hearing them called refugees. They are not refugees. They are the forsaken. They're victims. On our local morning talk show here through this past week, I don't know if you heard it, not a white face amongst them. That was one of the things that was said. Then they turn around 10 minutes later and said, oh, show up at the Miramar and give money. You know, but it's pure racism. Had this been the elite, rich, white people, this would not have gone on. You know why? When they had that storm sitting out in the Gulf, they'd have made daggone sure that they all got out. They had school buses sitting there. School buses.
Yeah.
For one, they could have used. They were all damaged in flood water later, after the fact.
After the fact, you're right.
Could have used them before, because that thing took several days to go up through the Gulf. And when you're looking at a Category 5 storm like that, you get people out of the way. It's poor management. It's the same kind of poor management that happened during the World Trade Center towers, during the Oklahoma City bombing. It's the same poor management. And no, George Bush, it is your fault. Because where were you? On vacation, as always. You couldn't even let Cindy Sheehan come in, have a bowl of beans that her son's life paid for. Through your getting your stupid profits off that war over there for your no-bid contractors.
Well, you know, Diana, he made that visit to the afflicted area yesterday, and he's going back again Monday, and you know exactly why he's going to go back again Monday.
Oh, yes, just a photo op. The two people, he had two black ladies that he was hugging and holding there. I was wondering, I wonder if that isn't Condoleezza Rice's cousin or something.
Well,
because it is phony. You could see how phony he is, and it just sickens me. Because America, we've got a race problem in this country yet, and we better wake up to it.
I thought in my lifetime, when I was a young man, I really thought in my lifetime I'd see this racial problem go away.
No.
I really did. I had all the hopes. I marched with Dr. King. I'm a white guy.
Yeah,
I've got black friends.
I'm white too, but I'll tell you, right now, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed
of
it.
Well, I got to tell you that if I would go overseas right now, I had to travel overseas someplace and somebody asked me where I'm from.
Oh, we're American.
I would probably be ashamed to say I'm an American right now.
But then they made a lie. This guy, I don't know if you caught it, they were lying over that morning, I call it Jeff Rowe and Ellie Mae Clampett show. They said something that no other countries had come and offered us aid. Well, Hugo Chavez has already offered us aid.
Sure. Well, a lot of countries have.
Do you think they put that on there? These people, Iran offered us aid. George Bush turned them down. These people are offering an olive branch.
Cuba has offered medical supplies and medical
even
help.
Even little Cuba.
Yeah.
But no, George Bush, he's got to be the big, I'm a tough cowboy and I don't need you attitude, rather than let them give the olive branch and get peace in this world. No, he likes the antagonism. He likes being the show off, and he's a miserable loser.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Diane, thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Good to hear from you. Let's go to Dan in Fort Myers. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how you doing this evening?
Good.
You know, I see all these people getting, you know, having problems, and there's a flood, and how come your Democratic mayor did not take his school buses and get all these people out of there?
Big mistake.
Very big mistake.
What do you mean, you people?
You're piling on Bush. It's not his fault. It's the local people's fault.
I see. So let me ask you a question. You think that no matter what city we're talking about in this country, that the locals should be able to handle a catastrophic event of this size?
Not with you lefties in power.
Really?
That's right.
Okay, so the lefties aren't in power right now. The lefties aren't in power right now. So are the righties handling it okay?
Because y'all can't take care of yourselves. You're too much of a wimp.
Really?
Your show sucks and you sound like crap and you're an idiot.
Really? Well, Dan, you're a highly intelligent man, and I do thank you for your call, and you've added so much to the dialogue of the program this afternoon, as people like you normally do. Here's one of these men that is probably a dropout from the public schools. We were talking a little earlier. We never learned to use any logic of any kind. And we thank you, Dan, for your great contribution to the program. You sound just like the rest of them, okay? And you know who them is that I'm talking about. Let's go to Eric in Vermont. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Guy. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, listen, that was a great caller, that last.
Wasn't he? Very, very succinct, very logical, made some wonderful points.
Well, I'm a psychology major, and I just go back to behavioral psychology, and I just sort of think how well-programmed he was.
Well, I didn't get that, yes, and I didn't get a chance to ask him before he started off on his little toot there. I didn't get a chance to ask him his opinion of just how well George Bush had handled this this whole thing so far. You know, he is the leader of our government right now, and the government's in there, and, you know, it doesn't look so good.
Well, I think he was doing a great job earlier this week of collecting his stuff together, and then later on, you know, I think Poppy Bush came along, and Bill Clinton came along and sort of like said, well, J.R., you got to sort of like pick up on the ball here just a little bit here, and maybe do something and sort of say, show the American public that you're going to actually sort of like have some leadership skills or something, and like show up, you know. I mean, it's the prom date, you know, you got to sit there and go there and do the dance. But I'm ticked, you're ticked, and I think there's a bunch of people all over the country that are really ticked. I mean, I can't tell you how many tears I've shed all by myself this week as imaginable of all the other tears that other people are, and I'm safe in Vermont, and my heart goes out to all those people that are sitting there suffering a major calamity that we have never suffered in this country to the extent and a natural disaster such as we have and have had such poor leadership skills. There's been no command and control. It was a 5 in the Gulf before it hit on Sunday. It came in on land as a 4. They did the exercise PAM as a 3, and they knew what was going to happen. And these guys are still sitting playing guitar on Monday afternoon out in the West someplace and having little birthday cakes with John McCain. And I'm terribly sorry. I'm just really ticked, as everybody is here, I hope, about what poor leadership we have in this country regarding this issue and regarding every other issue that goes on in terms of our national security.
Absolutely right, Eric. Leadership, you know, people sometimes accuse me of being one-sided. You've heard me say, and everybody on this program heard me say, I don't think we have any leadership right now. I'm concerned about people on the left being so politically correct during this whole debacle and not coming forth and saying so. I'm sick of it, and we need some leader to step forth right now and take the reins, and no one's doing it. I'm very disappointed. I'm very disappointed at this great nation.
We are. And I think I'm leaving time for somebody else to say more important things than I said, other than just sort of venting out, because basically that's all I do.
We've all got some venting to do this week, Eric. Thank you so much for your call.
Yes, sir.
So good to hear from you. Yeah, I'll get back to the phones in just a moment. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, and 7503, and 7504. We've heard this candy-coated so many times. I've got the TV screen on in here, and here's George Bush talking again. And he's got Michael Chertoff standing behind him. And I'm going to tell you, if he doesn't fire this guy, if Michael Chertoff isn't fired almost immediately or shortly after this thing is over so they can save face or something, you will know, well, we already know, how in the world could Bush be happy with the way this has been handled. I'm not saying he needs to go down there and do it himself and dig ditches and pump the water out himself. I know he needs to surround himself with competent people, and he has not done so. And it's like we're involved in the Second Battle of New Orleans, and there's some questions that have to be asked about it. Will this surpass 9/11 as the biggest moment in contemporary history, or is it going to become old hat and slide into second place in importance to the bureaucrats who run Washington? Bureaucrats, I hate that word. And one question's already been asked by Dennis Hastert: should New Orleans be restored? What an idiotic thing to say. You know, we're already paying to rebuild Iraq. Now, how much are we willing to pay to restore one of our great, most important cities? You know, if the long-predicted massive earthquakes, for example, hit San Francisco or Los Angeles, should we just cover over the debris and help move away someplace else away from the fault line? I doubt anybody would suggest that. But then there's a lot of rich white people in San Francisco, isn't there? And we also need to ask the delicate question of whether or not this nation will ever conquer the racism, which still exists after all the struggles we've had for civil rights. It still exists. During 9/11, many of the victims were important white people. But most of the victims down at New Orleans disaster are poor, and they're black, and they're so poor, in fact, that many of them didn't even have enough money to flee the storm. We got to ask if this response time for our government wouldn't have been faster if the victims in New Orleans were white and wealthy, and you know the answer to that question. You know it as well as you know your own name. What if this would have been, what if it had happened here locally in Naples, Florida? Huh? Naples, Florida, same thing happened. Multi-million-dollar homes are as common as the palm trees. I think you know the answer to that. And FEMA has said that a Category 5 hurricane in New Orleans is on the same level as a terrorist attack in New York City or an earthquake in San Francisco. If that's the truth, then why did the White House and the Department of Homeland Security only show substantial interest and fund remedies for New York, for the New York version of a catastrophe? So if everyone knew that New Orleans was an accident waiting to happen, why were so precious few precautions taken? Why weren't the residents, and I thought a lot about this, why weren't the residents encouraged to have or provided with some inflatable rafts or life jackets in their homes, just like you'd keep in your boat, along with the sort of food supplies promoted following 9/11? And did you know that while FEMA and Homeland Security were trying to figure out what to do, as I mentioned earlier, Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania called Haley Barbour, and he sent 2,500 of his National Guard troops, sent them down. In other words, a Democratic and a GOP governor from vastly different states and ideologies got matters coordinated, even as the pitifully slow Bush regime people were still scratching their heads trying to figure out what to do next. And one thing we did learn, as I've said before, if you really need something done, call the Coast Guard. They're the real heroes in this whole affair, just as they were during the initial response to 9/11. Remember that? Remember them getting all the folks away from 9/11 across the river? Let's see, where are we going to go here on the phone? Let's go to Susie in Fort Myers. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Guy. How are you?
Good, thank you.
The reason why the Red Cross was not allowed in there to serve food and give all their good stuff was they interviewed a gentleman who was like the honcho or CEO for Red Cross, and the area was not secure. and they were not allowed in until the area was secure because of all the guns that were stolen, et cetera, et cetera. So that was on Fox News a couple nights ago.
Oh, on Fox News.
Yeah, well.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's kind of a pretend news channel.
Well, I'm not here to fight with you. About
No, I'm not either. But I'm saying
channel.
I'm
just telling you what I heard and what I saw.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm saying you have to take what you hear on Fox kind of with a grain of salt.
Well, where is this guy coming from? You're telling me he's not the right guy?
What guy?
The guy from the Red Cross.
There's a lady that's in charge of the Red Cross.
Well, that may be true, but maybe this guy is the guy in charge of that area. I don't know.
I don't know either, but it was ludicrous for them to start saying that the area needed to be secure. What were they going to do? Wait on every criminal to be rounded up in New Orleans before they went in and helped the rest of the folks? That was really a silly argument.
Well, according to him, all of their workers, and you should know this, they are volunteers.
That's right.
So they're going to put their life on the line to serve food. I don't think I would go in there if I was a volunteer.
I will tell you this. If I knew what I know about what was happening in that city, about what was happening at the convention center and the Superdome, I would have walked right in that town and taken whatever chance I had to get the job done, because there were women, little children, infants dying in that town. And you're not going to tell me that a lot of people didn't have guts enough to walk in there, and that people would not have recognized that goodwill was coming their way and left them alone. And I'm tired of Fox News coming across. I saw this myself on Fox News. That's why I talk about them the way I do. They showed on the camera two white people and a youngster walking into a grocery store, taking some food, and they said, here's some folks looking for food. They went right across the street, saw some black folks, and said, here's some looters.
What were the black folks taking?
Food. But they were looters, and the white people were looking for food. So that's why I take whatever I see on Fox News with a grain of salt.
Okay, well, thank you for your
time. Thank you very, very much. Where are we going to go to? My phone lines are all jammed up. Going to go to Ben in White Rose, Elgin. Ben Birch is with us from the Great White Rose Society.org. Ben's from Elgin, Illinois. Hi, Ben.
How's it going, guy?
Good. What's up, Ben?
Well, there's several reasons why those school buses weren't used and weren't useful in this evacuation. Prior to the storm, there had been a mandatory evacuation order, and all of the school bus drivers being city employees left immediately. Okay? And all of the keys are kept in a safe, and the employee who could open them wasn't there. After the storm, they were flooded out. And moreover, those buses that were available were offered to FEMA and to Department of Homeland Security, and they were told, they were ordered not to use them because they weren't considered to be safe for an evacuation. They don't, among other things, have sanitary facilities. Secondly, FEMA had not designated any place to evacuate folks to. So you load a bunch of people in the buses, where are you going to go?
Exactly right.
Right now, if you look, the buses are under about 7 feet of water.
Yeah, saw that picture of them there. It seemed like a lot of buses. It's a shame the way this all came down. And I'm not saying that the blame all goes to one department. It does not. There's plenty of it to spread out. And we have to examine this so thoroughly so that it doesn't happen again.
I agree. And several things come to mind, though. Thing number one is the right-wingers are the first ones to say, let's not politicize this, now is not the time to point fingers, and then they immediately follow on with politicizing and finger-pointing.
Yeah, I heard Hannity do this week.
Number one. Number two, making it not happen again, that's a great thing, but right now we have to actually have an effective response because, you know, while we're on this conversation, if I've got the rate at which people are dying down, three more people are going to die.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
people are dying like minutes ticking off the clock.
They're in the worst of conditions.
They're in the worst of conditions. Now they're evacuating shelters in Biloxi due to dysentery. Okay, so disease is starting. We have got hundreds of bloated corpses in the water. We have even more trapped in buildings. There are people that we presume, because we had 911 calls from them during the flooding, that were trapped in their attics by the flooding. Those airboats that the FEMA refused, would have been ideal for going from gable to gable and cutting a hole in the roof and making sure there wasn't a dead person in there.
Yeah, the homes aren't going to be salvageable anyway.
No, there's very little that's going to be salvageable from any of this. And all of this, 100% of this, would have been avertible had the 80% finished repairs to the levee been completed. You know, 80% of a levee is just about as useful as 80% of a bridge.
That's exactly right.
Good and
point.
Bush knew in June, when he canceled that money, that the levees were not complete. Or he should have known. Maybe Bush just delegates everything while he's sitting there drinking his tumbler of Crown Royal every day. I don't know.
Well,
but, it's pitiful the way he's allowed people to die when if he had issued the proper orders on the first day of this, none of this would have happened.
Well, we got to stop for a break at the bottom of the hour. Walter Maestri, the emergency management chief for Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, he told the New Orleans Times Picayune newspaper, and I quote, "It appears that the money that was taken away from their budget, has been moved in the president's budget to handle homeland security and the war in Iraq, and I suppose that's the price we pay. Locally, nobody is happy that the levees can't be finished, and we are doing everything we can to make the case that this is a security issue for us." But his pleas went unheeded. Ben, got to stop for a break at the bottom of the hour. Great to hear from you, everybody. Be sure and get on over to the WhiteRoseSociety.org you can hear the archives of many good programs over there. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
We're going to pause for a break right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We'll be back right after a couple of words. Don't go away.
This is The Guy James Radio Network. Who says nothing good ever came out of the Internet? You're at theguyjamesshow.com. Quit surfing the Internet. All the training you'll ever need is right here. This is The Guy James Show.
Helpful marketing tip number 103. If you have a web designer, a graphic designer, and a search engine optimizer, you may be spending a lot more than you're making on your website. Remember that any web designer worth their salt is already an expert graphic designer and an SEO all in one. If not, you may want to consider changing design firms. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
We at The Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Heather Wilkes, Mesa, Arizona. Elaine Miller, Newton, Iowa. Virginia Miller, Newton, Iowa. Dr. Irvin Winsboro, Fort Myers, Florida. Valerie Cribbs, Cherry Valley, California. Michael Bradley, Austin, Texas. Steve Brodkin, North Fort Myers, Florida. Ben and Suzanne Williams, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Chris Kern, Hudson, Florida. And Mark Mihef, Reno, Nevada. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring 'Em On. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son to write, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, she'll be a year old. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. You got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. This is too much for them to die with. In some lands that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just want to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
Do you have a business or product that might benefit from a little national attention?
You're going to like this.
Are you interested in having Guy James talk about your product or service?
Well, this is it.
Contact Gene Charles today at 239-405-0355 or online at guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com.
Helpful marketing tip number 302. Even though you may be paying for full color, the average person can only assimilate four or five easily. Rather than swashing every word, header, or border in every variation of every color in the rainbow, try choosing two or three solid colors either you like or that represent your business and go with those. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number two, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
Who says nothing good ever came out of the internet? You're at theguyjamesshow.com. Quit surfing the internet. All the training you'll ever need is right here. This is the Guy James Show. Southwest Florida, your official lie detector is here. Now, your wait is over. This is the Guy James Show. While the radical right spin their heads off, all that's left is the truth. You're on the Guy James Show.
You sure are, and we're glad to have you along with us this evening. We've got the phone lines jammed. You can still try and give us a call, 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. Look, I know there are a lot of our right-wing friends listening to this program this evening. They always do, and I get the hate mail afterwards, so I know they're listening. And I know most of them don't have the guts to call. That's fine. And I do expect to have a two-way conversation with everybody that calls. You don't cut me off, and I'll try not to cut you off unless you're saying something totally outrageous. But that's the way it is. And I'm sick at heart at the way things are going right now. I think a lot of Americans had sleepless nights this week. I know I did. I have heard many people, it has surprised me, some of the people told me that they watched TV and watched these events unfold, had tears in their eyes and couldn't stop. It's one of those catastrophic events that comes along maybe once in a lifetime. In our case, most of us that are living right now, twice. We had 9/11 and now we've got this, and we hope to God we don't have anything like this come along again. But we've got to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I somehow feel an obligation to try and reach somebody that still thinks this administration is all hunky-dory and all, and convince them that it isn't. And we should never, ever consider putting someone like this in office again. Never. I'm not totally enamored with the Democrats right now, the way things are going. But my God, surely no one thinks that anybody could have done a worse job than this than George W. Bush. You know, where's the leadership? Where was the president while the residents of the North Gulf Coast were finding themselves devastated by this Hurricane Katrina? Where was he? He was in Arizona playing the guitar at a fundraiser, smiling, having a good old time. If that isn't akin to Nero fiddling while Rome was burning, I don't know what would be. You know, this is the guy who very obviously has no interest whatsoever in attending to the day-to-day problems in America. Oh, sure. If you're one of his fat cat friends who raised millions of dollars for his campaign, then he cares for you. What they call them? I can't think what they call those people. Pioneers or whatever that raised all the money for him. And maybe you're a big-time Washington lobbyist who wants some more friendly tax cuts for your big business employer. Then you'll get the red carpet treatment from this administration. Or maybe you're a Bush oil buddy. Then you get all the FaceTime you want. But if you're a common Joe, forget it. You aren't getting the time of day from these people. Rest assured of that. That is a fact. And I think their handling of this whole affair shows that in spades. Bush showed his lack of leadership to the whole world this week concerning the hurricane disaster, and don't get me wrong, I did not expect him to pilot a helicopter into New Orleans on a rescue mission. I didn't expect him to bail water or drive an ambulance. I expected him to show some leadership. But as always is the case with Junior Bush, it was noticeably absent, completely absent. Even the foreign press picked up on it and wrote some very, and I don't know how many of you have seen these, but some very uncomplimentary articles about the whole thing. You know, you got to face it. Sooner or later, you have to face the fact that Bush is no Teddy Roosevelt, he's no FDR, he's no JFK, and he's no Abe Lincoln. Really, he pales in comparison to Herbert Hoover and Warren G. Harding as a leader. If you're honest with yourself, I can think of no modern-day American chosen to lead who does a poorer job of it than Junior Bush. And if you're 100% honest with yourself, you can't either. And you know that's the truth. This past week absolutely personified the old saying, too little, too late. The fact that it took so painfully long to get the supplies and aid into those affected by this terrible disaster made us look like Sri Lanka. Or maybe Bangladesh. That's what it looked like on TV. That's what it looked like to the world. The response to this was definitely on par with some of the third world countries. And you could really tell that all of America was concerned over poor response when the right-wing talk show host became so defensive along about Thursday. Did you hear him? Absolutely. They went into full battle defensive mode. It was so obvious that they started to blame the people themselves for what was happening instead of where the real blame lies. You know, I actually heard Limbaugh and O'Reilly both say that they think most of those who didn't leave the New Orleans area stayed around just so they could loot the place after everybody left. What an asinine thing to say. What a racist thing to say. Did they see the same pictures I saw? Pictures of little kids and infants and elderly and infirm folks who quite obviously couldn't care for themselves? Did those right-wing talkers know that about 25% of those living in New Orleans don't even own a car? They're so poor. And even if they did, they may well not have had enough money for a tank of gas or the lodging it'd take to flee that storm. What were you going to do? To be absolutely sure, there was an element of criminal mischief and violence going on. But as always, it was by a very small minority of people. And the racial comments I heard this week were appalling. You know, pundits were saying only the black folks, it was only them who were causing the trouble. Hell, some of the areas suffering the worst flooding in the Big Easy are over 90% black. Who else were they going to see? I don't condone stealing, but I'll tell you this. If it were my child dying of thirst or hunger, I'd most certainly grab any food and water available to help him. Sometimes you've got to be faced with a desperate situation before you know for sure what you'd actually do. So let's not be throwing stones at some of the good people who are out foraging for food and water. I think I'd do the same, and you probably would too, if you're going to be completely honest. Those are my thoughts about the administration and their pitiful excuse for a relief effort. Now, what about the Democrats? Strangely quiet, don't you think? Just one more example of not wanting to rock the boat, being so politically correct, and not saying anything bad about Bush. I think the only one involved in the whole affair that I've got a much respect left for is that mayor of New Orleans. He told it like it was. He showed his actual emotions. He did on Thursday. He wanted to save his people from further hardships, and he told the plain, ugly truth about the matter, no matter whose toes he stepped on. But of all the miserable things that happened this past week concerning the relief effort, I don't think I've ever seen a more bold, naked political move than having Bush show up at the same time the trucks were pulling in with the supplies. You got to know they wanted to make him look like a George Patton marching into Berlin. Instead, it made him look like what he really is, and that's a cheap political opportunist. You know, I'm surprised they didn't have him dressed up in his little flight suit again, carrying a plastic turkey and throwing $20 bills at the folks as he passed by. That's just how painfully obvious that situation was. So what I'm saying is that I think there's precious little real leadership in this country right now. I don't see anyone capable of drawing America close again. Someone who can give that fireside chat or the great natural-born leadership of a John Kennedy or a Paul Wellstone. Where are those people, America? I know they have to be there somewhere. They're out there somewhere, ready to be discovered by a by an American public that is so hungry for good leadership on both sides of the aisle. You know, hopefully soon, it better be soon, the right man or woman is going to come forth and show the kinds of leadership that, that we got to have to get this nation back on track again. I just hope they come forward in time, because after witnessing this past week, we are sinking fast. And I hate to say that about this country that I love. When I was growing up, I was taught to believe that this is the richest, most powerful, most godly, good nation on this planet. That we were invulnerable. That nothing terrible would ever happen to us because we're America. And we had good, strong leaders. We had real leaders. I'm a Democrat all my life. But we had Dwight Eisenhower, a good man. A good, good, decent man who was a leader. We've had FDR, we've had some great leaders in this country, and we're so fortunate to have had them. But look what we've descended into. Look what's happened to this country, the political fighting that's taken place over the last 13 years now, ever since Bill Clinton got elected. It was 8 years of hell, political fighting and trying to get him out of office. And we've had 5 years of terrible unrest with this incompetent man who's at the helm right now. A man that I know, I want to believe in my heart, had the American public really known what George Bush was about, had they really known, I don't think they would have put him into office. As you know, many of you know, I don't think they really did put him into office, but I don't think he would have gotten there. Because he's just not presidential material. He's not leadership material. He never has been, never will be. Never. Talk about leadership. You talk about one of the most corrupt guys that ever lived in politics, and yet he was a leader. Where's Huey Long when you need him? In Louisiana. Man, oh, Huey. No matter what you think of Huey Long, and I don't think much of him, but there was a guy that could make people dance. There was a guy right there that would have taken the bull by the horns in this situation and got something done no matter what it took. It's the kind of man Huey Long was. We're going to get back to the phones. We're going to talk to John in Cape Coral. Hi, John.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Yes.
Do you think Bush would have ever shown up if the media had not given all this attention? Hello?
I'm sorry, John. You want to repeat that?
I said, do you think Bush would have made his appearance if there hadn't been all this attention from the media?
Oh, no. Surely not.
I mean, he had to be embarrassed finally by all the people asking the questions before he ever showed up, is my point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he had to be coerced into going for a big photo op, and that's... you know, that's what happened in that situation.
Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is on this same station, you have a morning show. Friday morning, yesterday morning, I called up, and I criticized Bush, and I said some of the very same things that have been said on this show tonight. For that, I was called a communist. And the other statement that was made was one of the statements you have alleged some of the other people made, but I heard this one also made, you know, as they try to rebut my few words before they cut me off, was that said the people there, the victims, should be doing more to help themselves.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they should do that, given the fact that absolutely nothing.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, it did mean nothing. I think the people, had they known... had they expected, had they had any idea, the ones that could would have gotten out of town. But let's face it, there's a whole bunch of these folks that couldn't go anywhere.
The fact of the matter is these people are on the run. And anybody who criticizes them, the only thing they can do is call people like myself communists. And that was done publicly on your station on the same airwaves you're on now. And frankly, I was just appalled at the treatment that I received simply because I criticized Bush for not doing more for, again, being so short in terms of producing help while people were dying. And I told them how appalled I was. Well, of course, they couldn't say it, and then they had a few of the right-wing callers call me also to criticize me. And it just amazes me how what lengths these people will go to support this man no matter how bad he is.
And, John, don't you know, all those people in New Orleans, by God, they even those 90-year-old black ladies in the infirmed in the wheelchair, they should pull themselves up by the bootstraps and do without any governmental interference into that whole thing at all. Everybody should be able to fend for themselves. And you, by suggesting that maybe society ought to help those people, you're a commie.
Absolutely. You know, another thing that appalled me, and I just want to make one more comment. With all the media coverage, I remember during 9/11, they had the good taste to stop the commercialism.
Yeah.
And I'm watching these news broadcasts of people dying, of people in tragic circumstances, cut away to our break so we can show the opulence of this country so people can buy cars, take Viagra. The advertising was appalling in the middle of this. Nobody had good taste to realize we're going through a tragedy as great, if not greater, than 9/11, and they still had to have the commercialism that is selling the stuff out there. And to me, my attitude was I wouldn't buy from any of these people because they didn't have the good taste to say this was not timely.
Well, and speaking to people taking advantage of the situation, we're all going to buy gasoline, aren't we?
Well, I wonder about that, too. I know for myself, I'm changing cars to get the best type of hybrid there is, because I'll tell you, that's the only thing you can run. I think that people's driving habits are going to change.
Absolutely.
And they have to change. And when your guest talked about sacrifice, we're not talking about sacrifice in this country. We're going along with an opulent style of life. Just listen to the commercials that surround this show and the car advertisements that surround this show. We have a V8. It's going to go. It's got so much power.
Oh, yeah. But let's qualify that. They are not sponsors of this show. You said the right word, surround, yes.
I was very careful how I said that.
I know. I wanted to make sure everybody understood.
I know they're not sponsoring you. They're sponsoring this station, which allows you to buy some airtime so they can support the right-wingers and pay them in the morning. You know, what goes on for talk radio at this time is just they do not want to hear another point of view.
No, certainly not.
And they want to support what's going on no matter how immoral it is. And frankly, I'm just appalled.
Makes you wonder what George Bush would have to do to make some of those folks be disenchanted with him. How far would it have to go?
Well, you know, my thinking is the only good thing that may come out of this, and I've heard people say this, Guy, is that this is such a bad situation, it may spell the end of his
mistake. He certainly did that.
He did? George Bush said he made a mistake?
That's right, and it's not...
Well, when did he say that?
A couple days ago.
What did he say?
Said that the rescue effort should have began a little sooner.
That's kind of a long ways from saying that he made a mistake, isn't it?
Well, whatever he would say, you're going to criticize him nonetheless. But there's a stepladder of, there's a level of hierarchy here.
Well, let me ask you, do you
criticize FEMA, you can criticize at the local level. Think about it at the local level.
Who's ahead of FEMA right now? Who's ahead of FEMA right now?
I don't know the person.
Michael Chertoff. And who appointed him? He's a man with no qualifications for that job whatsoever. Who appointed him?
Well, Bush, evidently.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, on the local level, they knew Katrina was coming. They knew that, it's not all of a sudden this new information that people there don't have a lot of money, don't have cars. They could have done something to get these people out before the storm showed up.
What, Chris? What could they have done?
Bust them out. They're busting them out now. Why couldn't they bust them out sooner?
As we know, the bus drivers were not available. There sat all the buses. I'm not defending everything that happened locally, but a local community is not prepared in any way, shape, or form to handle this kind of a catastrophic event.
Well, it's the local community. It's the whole state. And then as far as these levies, you've got a lot of businesses in New Orleans that, you know, don't pay their taxes. I'm sure the casinos that take in $500 million a day, if they pay their taxes, if they do what they're supposed to do, there should have been plenty of reserves to fix these levies. So there are a lot of issues that go beyond simply criticizing Bush. And if he did make a mistake in, you know, whether he hired the wrong guy for FEMA, well, how do you know that he hired the wrong guy until something like this happens? You don't.
Well, so, then we should have him step forward and after this is all over, get rid of the guy. But you know that's not going to happen. I'll say right now that's not going to happen.
Right. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, they wanted food sooner. How do you think people would have felt if helicopters flew by and started dropping bags of food? These people would have complained about that. I mean, anything you do in a sensitive situation like this is going to yield criticism.
Well, they could complain all they wanted to, but at least they'd have some food in their belly, and we could have saved some more lives.
But you might have said, "Oh."
So you think this was handled okay then?
George Bush thinks these guys are animals. They're all animals. These people. Look at them. They're dropping food from helicopters. They don't even want to go down there. I mean, anything he did would have caused criticism from people who are Democrats.
Well, that's right.
Bottom line.
That's right. But if you're a real leader, you go ahead and do it anyway, don't you?
Well,
to hell with what somebody says. Go ahead and be a leader and get the food and water in there. Who cares what somebody thinks? Save people's lives. Do the right thing. Who cares what the Democrats would say?
Well, I guess we're both proving points. I see what you're saying, but at the same time, people would have criticized them for that. They would have said, oh, they think, you know, these people aren't worth the effort if they just drop food from helicopters. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the whole thing, you're not going to defend the way they've handled this, are you, Chris?
Well, I'm not necessarily defending it. I'm just saying there are other ways to look at it.
And if you had a chance, Chris, I take it that you voted for George Bush, maybe?
Yeah, because I thought it was better than I didn't think the Democrats had much to offer. I mean, Kerry would have made a better president than George Bush.
Remember
how he handled what happened at the World Trade Center?
Handled it?
Yeah.
I don't know of anything he did that anybody else wouldn't have done.
You feel protected when you go to bed at night? I mean, there's never been an incident with...
Absolutely not. Do I feel safer now than I did 4/9? Absolutely not. And this whole situation this weekend has pointed out exactly what I'm talking about. Homeland Security is worthless. They've proven that this week. It's absolutely worthless. And that's who Michael Chertoff is head of, is Homeland Security. And he's proven that organization, that's a big invention of the Bush administration to consolidate all the powers, they've proven this week that they are totally and completely ineffectual, and they are in charge of protecting us.
Okay. This is the first time I've ever called the show, but
yeah,
I've never asked you a question about 9/11. How would you measure success after 9/11? If somebody said, okay, what proves to you that the job is being done, how would you answer that question?
Well, I think we did what we needed to do. I said he didn't do anything anybody else wouldn't have done. We cleaned up the mess. We got on with life again. We went and invaded Afghanistan and went after the Taliban, which I still think was probably the right thing to do, to go after Osama bin Laden, and then the trouble started. And then the real trouble started. And we got off on a tangent that we never should have gone off on. We put in men and material and treasure in a war that was ill-gotten and never should have been started and has done nothing to protect us. And the Homeland Security right now, I feel that this country is more vulnerable than we've ever been before. And I think they've proven it this week.
Well, I mean, I think you have to take solace in the fact that there are thousands of people in jails, whether, you know, it's humanitarian, not humanitarian, you could get into that argument, but in jails and back where they need to be. And, you know, I think whatever level of power terrorists thought they had, I think they're questioning that.
Don't think there's a lot more terrorists now than there were?
Well, I don't know if there are more necessarily.
You know, it's like trying to capture cockroaches. You find a nest of them, and then they're spread out. The idea that they were all in Iraq was a ridiculous notion, that we're going to go in there and stamp out terrorism. It is absurd. We went after a cockroach with a baseball bat, and that's just not how it's done. Got to move on, Chris. I thank you very much for your call. Oh, my. The show is just going by so fast. So many people got so many things to say, and I wish I could let everybody talk as long as they wanted to today. I'm in a talking mood, but then I'm supposed to be, aren't I? That's what I do here. We've got so much we want to cover this last hour, and we're hopefully going to have another guest for you coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. And he's going to have some eye-opening events to tell us about as well, talking about the National Guard and Phil Crowley, I believe. Is Phil going to be with us the next half hour? Did you talk to him? Okay, good. We're going to have Phil Crowley with us the next half hour, and he's a very learned man when it comes to this. You're listening to Guy James on Wink WNOG.
Listening to the Guy James Show, America's number one democratic radio talk show, counteracting the melodrama and sarcasm of radical right. All that's left is the truth. Stay tuned. More of the Guy James Show is on the way. This is the Guy James Show on Wink WNOG. Who says nothing good ever came out of the internet? You're at theguyjamesshow.com. Quit surfing the internet. All the training you'll ever need is right here. This is the Guy James Show.
This is a very sensitive subject. Not good. It's bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From the moment I heard Barbara say I had a son, I knew that I'd be safe cause I'd never be alone. We GOPers shouldn't speak a lot about our feelings. Both hurt and pain don't make us too appealing. I'd hope Junior would look up to me, run the business of the family. Have an evil empire just like his dear old dad. Get him out of Vietnam, that doesn't look too bad. Junior should act like he's a good guy. Finish up my war and cover up his lies. Be evil and show no feelings too. Listen to DeChaney, who'll tell him what to do. Junior's in jeopardy. Carl Rove, see? Cut him off. Treat him unfairly. Nothing else matters. No siree. Nothing else but the legacy.
George, what are you doing? Are you, what are you doing, George?
Sorry there, Dick. Just,
What, George, what are you doing?
Singing my son a little something. Well, you'll get to see it. Hopefully you'll get a chance to see it. Know what you're all about.
You have a product. You have a service. You want to tell people about your product or service, but you're afraid of being taken down a long road of expenses with no ride back. I'm Johnny Johnson, president of J2K, producers of The Guy James Show. Every week, we're called on to help businesses present their products and services to consumers by radio, video, and web. Businesses like yours. Visit us on the web at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
Do you have a business or product that might benefit from a little national attention?
You're going to like this.
Are you interested in having Guy James talk about your product or service?
Well, this is it.
Contact Gene Charles today at 239-405-0355 or online at Guy James at theguyjamesshow.com. We at The Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Ann Ross, New York, New York. Luciano Rossetti, Cape Coral, Florida. Alice Knowlton, Milford, Massachusetts. Dave Goggin, Eureka, California. Annette Fenner, Marysville, Washington. Joe and Nancy Vogel, St. Paul, Minnesota. Juan Puerto, Fort Myers, Florida. Sarah Kay, Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Marcia Johns, Merritt Island, Florida. To join the growing list of those that support The Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Helpful marketing tip number 201. If your audio production company puts you on hold and you hear either Muzak or some generic
"We really appreciate your call"
message, you may not want to trust them to produce your message on hold either. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
Southwest Florida, your official lie detector is here. Now, your wait is over. This is the Guy James Show. Democratic Radio is on the air now.
God bless the
your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Now, here's Guy James.
Welcome back. Did you ever have one of those days? I'm having one of those days. I'm having a hard time keeping order here in the studio this afternoon. My producer, Johnny, and Layla, they've conspired to just run amok. And Ron's behaving himself out pushing the buttons. Ron's very calm and collected. But these two, I don't know. I just don't know. Hey, we've got 1 hour left in the program, so glad to have you all along with us this evening. All of our friends here at Wink WNOG in Naples and Fort Myers, Florida, and all around the world on the internet. Glad to have our large internet audience with you. As promised, I told you we're going to have a special guest coming up this hour, and I really have to apologize to our guest. I was a little late in getting around to this. I don't know what happened. One of those scheduling snafus, and it's my fault. Nobody's but my fault. And I'd like to introduce to you right now a gentleman that's got a list of accomplishments in his life that you don't have time to list them all. But I will say a couple right now. During the Clinton administration, P.J. Crowley was a special assistant to the President of the United States for National Security Affairs, serving as Senior Director of Public Affairs for the National Security Council. Right now, he's Senior Fellow and Director of National Defense and Homeland Security. He was in the military for 28 years, 11 of those years at the Pentagon, 26 years in the United States Air Force, retiring at the rank of Colonel. He's a man that's been around the block a time or two, a veteran of Desert Shield and Desert Storm and Kosovo. We are very, very happy and privileged to have P.J. Crowley with us. Again, he's Senior Fellow and Director of National Defense and Homeland Security at the Center for American Progress. Philip, P.J., thank you so much for appearing on the program today.
Guy, it's a pleasure.
So much happening this week, and we wanted to have you on today because we are naturally talking about national defense and homeland security. And what has happened with this terrible, catastrophic disaster and how we might have done a little bit better. I know you're an expert about the military and perhaps about the National Guard. And fill us in on what you think about the events of this week.
Well, I think we are now actually finally seeing the full weight of the response coming to bear, thankfully. Troops are coming into New Orleans and the Gulf Coast in greater numbers. Water and food are finally getting there, and people are getting out of New Orleans, to places like Houston and other places in the Southwest. There's no question that the response was slow. I think a lot of that had to do with missed opportunities before the hurricane hit. I think there, for whatever reason, there was a lack of understanding that once they called for an evacuation, they had to understand that there were substantial numbers of people living at or below the poverty line that would need help to get out. They didn't do that. And then once they made the call to go to the Superdome, not a bad decision, but then they didn't pre-stock it with water and food porta potties so that people could, if necessary, live there for as many days as they did. So it really calls into question, while we have done a great deal since 9/11 to be better prepared, for disasters that are man-made, clearly in some way, shape, or form, FEMA has lost the handle on its ability to respond to natural disasters, which is, of course, its bread and butter.
Some of the questions that callers have had and some of our listeners have had today, for example, knowing that the storm was coming, perhaps your military experience can help us out on this. Why wasn't there some advanced staging done in that region where they knew they'd have supplies and men and material ready to roll in right away?
Well, I mean, in fairness a bit, while you do know the storm's coming, you don't know precisely where it's going to hit. So, a little bit right, we would be having a different discussion. A little bit left, we've been having a different discussion. So I do think that there, in fairness, we have to recognize that this was, for New Orleans in particular, the worst-case scenario. And there is a degree of difficulty here that we haven't confronted in terms of storms since Hurricane Andrew in Florida in 1992. I think, remarkably, there was some pre-planning. And, you know, for example, I noticed yesterday that you know, some trucks in Texas were loaded with water on Monday, ready to go, and then they never got the call. So I think that among other things, there just was a lack of leadership here, that for whatever reason, no one was in charge. The city officials, who have some responsibility, obviously, or the state officials, they looked to FEMA. FEMA looked back, and there was this kind of, in baseball parlance, a couple of swings and misses before finally we got started. And obviously, that day or two makes a huge difference in terms of the level of suffering, for the people that were stranded in New Orleans.
And so here we are again, after having the Homeland Security Organization put together, still talking about this issue of one government agency not talking to another.
Well, clearly, Homeland Security, a core element of the Department of Homeland Security is working with state and local officials. I think the Bush administration, in its approach to Homeland Security, has called for a partnership, but that partnership is based on, the federal government will decide what needs to be done, and state and local officials, will actually do it, and even more importantly, pay for it. I've been very critical of that approach, because, if we are, in a terrorism context, in the middle of a war, if we expect, as our leaders have said, that there is a real possibility of another terrorist attack, the federal government has to lead, and that means hands-on leadership, and that also means resources. I think taking it from the natural disaster, which Katrina was, to the prospect where, in a different setting, in a terrorism context, we could also be dealing with literally a couple of 100,000 displaced persons within our borders. And clearly what we're seeing here in Mississippi and in Louisiana is an inability to really cope with a very substantial number of people displaced from their homes. And that doesn't bode well if the next time it's not a storm, but a terrorist attack.
Well, any disaster, whether it's a terrorist attack or a storm that may happen in this country from now on, people have come to expect that since Homeland Security is functioning now, that supposedly functioning, that we're going to be protected. Should the average American, after seeing this, feel a little queasy about all that?
I think that it's very sobering, and we definitely have work to do, because obviously, in the storm context, obviously our primary challenge here is to try to minimize the social and economic damage. It's important to us and to our society, to our economy. But when you shift to the terrorism context, for example, and you look at Al Qaeda, part of their strategic mission here, from their standpoint, is to do serious damage to our society and to do serious damage to our economy. And so, if we're unable to cope effectively with the post disaster, that raises the economic impact on us, and it's the difference between whether, in this war on terror, as we call it, we win or lose. And so clearly today, we have not done the job, and that should have sobering. I hope that there will be a very hard look at this, because while we have done a lot of things right since 9/11. This is very serious stuff, and it really demonstrates that notwithstanding that we have made many changes, we still have an enormous amount of work to do.
What really bothers me throughout this whole thing is now that we've seen we've got some serious shortcomings in this department, is the seemingly inability of this administration to ever go back and say, well, we got to correct a mistake. We've made a mistake. We need to do better and so forth. And it's hard being a citizen and hearing somebody never make a mistake, never admit to making a mistake. And no one's ever been let go from this administration for some of the terrible miscues that have taken place. And in fact, some of them have been rewarded. And that's something that bothers me. I wanted to ask you about the effectiveness of the National Guard. I want to know, want you to explain to our listeners what, if any, effect the Iraq War has had on the ability of the National Guard to help in this situation in the North Gulf Coast.
Well, clearly it's had an effect. You can't put several thousand troops from Louisiana and Mississippi into Iraq and not say it did not have an impact. It clearly did have an impact. There were resources that they would normally be able to count on to be able to respond more rapidly in this situation, and those resources weren't there. I think we also have to be careful because obviously everyone's got a view about the war in Iraq, good, bad, or indifferent. But at the same time we say that it's had an impact, we also have to recognize that when the United States Army goes to war, for example, its combat reserve is the National Guard. So we can debate whether or not we belong in Iraq or if we're there now we should be getting out as quickly as we can. But what the mission of the Guard is doing in Iraq is a legitimate mission in terms of its ability to support the Army and be part of the long-term sustainment of any military campaign. So we've got to separate the two, but clearly, we think our mindset is that the National Guard is this kind of, part-time force. It's really not no longer, even while an individual soldier may serve on a part-time basis, the National Guard has become a real-time force in terms of its importance to the United States. Obviously, disaster response is one of its core missions. Combat support for the Army is one of its core missions. We have this evolving responsibility for the military defense of the United States. If there's a terrorist attack in the future and that terrorist attack exceeds the ability of local law enforcement to respond, these are three very vital missions in terms of our national security. We really do have to take a hard look at if we want the Guard to do all of this, if it can do all of this, if there are changes we have to make in the approach to the Guard, perhaps more of its soldiers need to be put on full-time status. Clearly, I think it needs a higher priority in terms of its equipment, because the same kinds of equipment that are important to disaster response, helicopters, trucks, and so on, are also important to warfighting. And as much as I think we've had individual soldiers in Iraq, what really I think the Guard has lost in its ability to respond here, is a lot of its equipment, because not only units in Louisiana and Mississippi, but units across the country have been feeding equipment overseas because of this failure to plan, and as a result, the Guard is really equipped at half the level it would normally be, and I think that while the Guard across the country is clearly responding to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, we've got 25,000 guardsmen who are there now. They've, rather than having this equipment in Louisiana, they've had this equipment in Illinois or other states, and it just adds up in terms of our ability to respond more rapidly to domestic needs here at home, even as we are fighting a war overseas.
What effect do you think it has? Most of the troops, the Guard coming in, are from out of this area. What's to be said for having the local Guard?
I think on the one hand, it has an impact. The value of the Guard is that it can operate both in a federal context and in the state context, and clearly, the Louisiana Guard knows its own backyard better than anybody else. That said, I think that the Guard has changed, and now we have, and rightfully so, we have compacts, where each of the governors have pledged to help a neighbor or another state if, for whatever reason, a disaster in one part of the country, requires a broader support, broader response than can be handled by that individual state. So, part of that is the natural evolution, of the Guard and a recognition that, for whatever reason, we seem to be experiencing more disasters, and these disasters are getting to be very very damaging and very very dangerous to us, and so I think in this particular case in particular it's not surprising to me. In fact, it's a sign that the system is working, that we have such a broad based support. But in terms of what we've really seen here, where while now the response is really maturing as it should, we're really 48 hours or so, in my view, behind schedule. This should have happened more rapidly. It didn't, and part of the reason is just because some of the local capability was not there.
Should we expect a local community like New Orleans and the cities of its size to be able to handle a catastrophic event of this size? What do we expect out of them in a way?
Well, certainly, I think one of the disconnects here, as we're learning, is that for years, if not decades, we've recognized at least the vulnerability of a city like New Orleans to this kind of disaster. Its levees were only built to a Category 3 hurricane level, and obviously Katrina was a high 4 or a 5, and exceeded the defenses of the city. I think in some respects this is really a unique disaster, but I think when you look from the natural disaster element to the terrorism disaster element, we can easily envision a scenario tragically involving a radiological device or a chemical or biological device that is going to make a very substantial area, probably in a metropolitan city, uninhabitable for months if not years. So we really have to recognize that we have the real prospect of having this number or higher of displaced people who will need to be relocated elsewhere, found shelter, get their kids in school, find employment, and we're clearly failing this test, and it's something we're going to have to get better at, because tragically, we have to plan to face these kinds of major disasters in the future.
I think America has, most of America has not been well informed about this area, New Orleans, but I think they're going to learn of the significant importance, the geopolitical importance of New Orleans. I think a lot of people think it's just the Big Easy down there on the river and doesn't mean a whole lot.
Yeah, and I think we're all learning the importance of New Orleans and the energy infrastructure in the Gulf as we all drive up to the gas station.
Oh, and as far as a port, I just don't think a lot of people understand the importance as a port in this country. They're going to find out when they go buy bananas and coffee here.
Oh, absolutely. No, Port of New Orleans, the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach, the Port of New York and New Jersey, these are all, while they are nominally owned and operated at the local level, these are national assets. And yet this is part of the disconnect in terms of the Bush administration's approach to homeland security, in that it seems to suggest that this is a local problem and one that is only the responsibility of the taxpayers, in this particular case of New Orleans or Louisiana, in the case of California, and or Florida and or New York. These are major regional and national assets, and we simply have to do better at protecting this critical infrastructure, because this is exactly what an Al-Qaeda is aiming at. They want to target strategically those parts of our society and economy and government that are the tipping points, and we're seeing here the prospect of cascading effects that start in New Orleans but ripple elsewhere across the country, and this is exactly the scenario that Al-Qaeda on September 11th was aiming at with the World Trade Center towers and the strike on the Pentagon, and what we have to at least plan that they're going to try to do again.
Oh, and I just don't think I'm from a Midwest farm background, and try and convince all the farmers in Ohio and Indiana and Illinois and Iowa and the grain belt up through there that New Orleans is just a local problem down on the bottom of the Mississippi River. all the grain goes down.
Oh, they know. Yeah, they do know. And I think we're getting more sophisticated. I mean, most people You know, you pick a small or mid-sized city, you know, they understand the importance of our relationship with countries like China. They probably do business in China. Or they depend on a widget that's now made in China. So I think we have notionally a more sophisticated aspect that impacts either at one part of the country can have an impact on the rest of the country, or an impact half a world away can somehow have a major impact on us, you know, here at home. And while I hesitate to suggest that you know, throwing money at a problem is not always the total solution, but I think one of the key areas here is that if we want this Department of Homeland Security to work, it is under-resourced right now, and I think this is what we're seeing, the erosion of the capabilities of FEMA, because, you know, the Department of Homeland Security is still worried about natural disasters, it's worried about counterterrorism, and at a particular level of resource that we have them at now, we've got our capabilities spread too thin. You know, Department of Homeland Security has only one-tenth of the budget of the Pentagon. That's not to say that we should cut military spending in the middle of a war. I don't think we should, but I think we really have to take a serious look and make sure that we are giving that Department of Homeland Security the resources it needs, the number of people it needs, the commitment it needs, but also make sure it has the right leadership so that we can do better, because clearly, you know, we're not where we need to be.
I think a lot of people will be surprised to learn that our enemies around the world are probably far more aware of an importance of a place like New Orleans than the American citizens are. And in fact, I would point out that during the Second World War, the Nazis had every intention of damaging the port of New Orleans because they knew how vital it was. And so it's far more important.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Al-Qaeda and other terrorist networks, they're scouring for information on the Internet. They're looking at where they can, where they think they see vulnerabilities. They're very patient. They think strategically. They act strategically. I think clearly we should all take comfort that we are coming up on 4 years and we have not been attacked. That's a good thing. We have made life harder for terrorist organizations, but they're adapting very quickly, as we see in places like Iraq, and as we've seen, you know, with the strikes against rail and transit systems in Madrid and London. You know, they're adapting, and the question is, are we adapting fast enough? And this is where you stare at the television screen and say, you know, we're doing some things better, but obviously, clearly, in this particular case in Houston, the Gulf Coast, we're not doing as well as we should.
Well, let me say it's been awfully good to have you on the program, and I should explain to the folks that we had a little conversation earlier, I think it was yesterday or today, I can't remember now. PJ is an avid Boston Red Sox fan, and I'm broadcasting from the winter home of the world champion Boston Red Sox. And if you make it down this way, you've got to stop in and say hello.
Well, I'm sure you've got some very devoted Red Sox fans there, and we just got to hope that we can hang on and get to the postseason once again.
Hey, miracles do happen. Thank you, PJ Crowley, Senior Fellow and Director of National Defense and Homeland Security at the Center for American Progress. Thanks so much for being
our
guest.
A pleasure.
Thank you. There's a man we could talk to for several hours. He knows a great deal about the situation we're involved in right now, both militarily and from a national security standpoint, and from a civilian standpoint. He advised the president, President Clinton, the last real president we had, on these matters, on national security matters. You have to wonder who's advising the president we have today. You do wonder that. I think we're going to pause for a break right now. You are listening to the Guy James Show on Wink WNOG, and we're going to be back right after these words.
This is the Guy James Radio Network. Who says nothing good ever came out of the Internet? You're at theguyjamesshow.com. Quit surfing the Internet. All the training you'll ever need is right here. This is the Guy James Show.
Helpful marketing tip number 103. If you have a web designer, a graphic designer, and a search engine optimizer, you may be spending a lot more than you're making on your website. Remember that any web designer worth their salt is already an expert graphic designer and an SEO all in one. If not, you may want to consider changing design firms. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number 2, the letter K, productions.com.
driven to succeed.
We at the Guy James Show would like to thank the following listeners for their support and welcome them to the growing army of clear-thinking Americans who have contributed to the nation's only listener-supported Democratic radio talk show. Heather Wilkes, Mesa, Arizona. Elaine Miller, Newton, Iowa. Virginia Miller, Newton, Iowa. Dr. Irvin Winsboro, Fort Myers, Florida. Valerie Cribbs, Cherry Valley, California. Michael Bradley, Austin, Texas. Steve Brodkin, North Fort Myers, Florida. Ben and Suzanne Williams, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Chris Kern, Hudson, Florida. And Mark Mehef, Reno, Nevada. To join the growing list of those that support the Guy James Show, log on to theguyjamesshow.com and make a contribution. Or send your contribution to The Guy James Show, 12870 Tradeway 4, number 108, Bonita Springs, Florida, 34135.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring them on. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary?
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, he'll be on your own. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. We got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. This is too much for them to die with. In some land that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just want to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
Do you have a business or product that might benefit from a little national attention?
You're going to like this.
Are you interested in having Guy James talk about your product or service?
Well, this is it.
Contact Gene Charles today at 239-405-0355 or online at Guy James at theguyjamesshow.com.
Helpful marketing tip number 302. Even though you may be paying for full color, the average person can only assimilate four or five easily. Rather than swashing every word, header, or border in every variation of every color in the rainbow, try choosing two or three solid colors either you like or that represent your business and go with those. J2K Productions. We just do it better. Find out how at j2kproductions.com. That's J, the number two, the letter K, productions.com. Driven to succeed.
Who says nothing good ever came out of the internet? You're at theguyjamesshow.com. Quits. The Guy James Show. The phone lines are open. Call 1-888-602-7500. 7501-0203-04. Right now and chime in.
Your weekend station. Wink WNOG.
All right, enough of Wink WNOG. You're listening to the Guy James Show on Wink WNOG. We've got our phone lines all backed up, and we'll get to the phones in just a moment. Please be patient. I'll get to you just as soon as I can. I'm surprised a subject hasn't come up very much this evening that I thought would, and perhaps it's my fault it hasn't, but I'll bring it up. And in the context of the fact that, well, today, like a lot of you folks, I helped raise some money for the Red Cross. And I ask a lot of folks to contribute to that organization fund for the victims of Hurricane Katrina. And you know, all over America, there's going to be millions of people who will donate their hard-earned dollars to help their fellow men and women and children who really are in terrible, serious trouble right now, people that don't know where their life is going to go from here. And that's the goodness that is America. That's the goodness. It's not the shots that were fired. It's not the unnecessary looting of TVs. That is the goodness. People are putting their hard-earned money where their mouth is. Lots of people who live paycheck to paycheck are going to sacrifice in order to give money to those who need it even more right now. So for this, we're all grateful. And this week, we heard a lot about looting that was taking place in New Orleans and surrounding communities. And Junior Bush crowed about how he was going to have zero tolerance for looters. Well, that's fine, but I think it's time for Bush to put up or shut up about looting. And let me explain what I mean, because some of his well-heeled oil buddies are the biggest looters of all. And you know what I'm talking about. Yes, the oil industry is taking advantage of the situation, every advantage of the situation, and they didn't even wait for the bodies to be counted. Not at all. These greedy bastards jumped right on it, right away, couldn't wait for the bodies to... No, they couldn't wait. Those signs at the gas station started going up right away, didn't they? And guess who's going to profit out of this whole thing? Guess who's going to profit? Obscene profits over this national nightmare that we're having right now. That's right. George Bush's oil buddies. Does anybody in my audience think that it is a coincidence that we've had Mr. Cheney, and my God, where is Dick Cheney? Is he dead? Has anybody seen Dick Cheney? No one's seen him for, I think, since August the 18th. There's been no, he's out duck hunting or something. No one's seen him, Darth Vader Cheney. But we got Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush, two big oil men. Do any of you think it's a coincidence that oil is at the highest price ever, and we've got an oil man as vice president and an oil man as president? Do any of you want to connect the dots between the two? I do. They're the looters. Just a couple of days into this horrendous disaster, they shot up their gasoline prices to over $3 and aren't looking back. Experts are saying $4 is not far behind. And oh sure, Bush's oil pals, they tried to look like the good and caring folks. And you know, they're going to advertise till hell won't have it right now what they're doing for the folks in New Orleans, the good oil folks. You know, Chevron gave $5 million. You know, that's about the same as me taking a nickel out of my pocket and throwing it into Kitty. And I'm not kidding. That's the truth. About a nickel compared to their $5 million. I figured it out. My net worth, I guess, what the obscene profits that they make. Chevron gave $5 million. ExxonMobil and Shell have pledged $2 million apiece. And BP and Citgo have pledged a dollar each. How very magnanimous of these rapists of the American economy. How very, very generous of them. They made more money than God this year. More record profits, more money than what they gave in a couple of hours due to the rise in the price of gases. Four of the world's most profitable companies are oil companies. And last year, ExxonMobil was the world's most profitable company, making $25 billion. But gee, they gave $2 million to the rescue effort. Thank you, ExxonMobil. And how much are you going to make off of it? You know, each of the largest oil companies will make billions and billions of dollars profit this year. And I do want to remind you that oil and gas companies gave Republicans 79% of their $61 million in campaign cash. Is that a coincidence? I think not. So somebody tell me, what would be wrong with Bush having zero tolerance for these looters? What would be wrong with putting a cap on oil and gas prices for a while to protect the American economy? To help Joe Working Man and his wife, who've got to take the kids to daycare and go to work every day, have to buy the gas. A lot of people have to buy the gas, and these greedy bastards know it. Oh, they know it. They know you're not going to give up your gasoline, and they're going to rape and pillage you for every dollar they can. They don't care if you got enough money left to eat. You think I'm kidding? They don't give a damn. Just so you could make enough money to pay for that gasoline. Protect America. You remember when Bush, when he was running for office, they said, what about oil and gas prices? Well, I know how to jawbone those people. Yeah. Why doesn't Junior Bush get tough with the oil companies and demand that for the good of America, they cool it for a while? Sure, the rich, they're going to drive their Cadillac Escalades and Lincoln Navigators in and fill up on that $3 and $4 gallon of gas and not say much. But what about the working guy just driving his Pinto to work every day? What about that? And the devastating ripple effect of this high-priced gas, it's going to cause higher prices right across the board. Food, clothing, everything that you can name is shipped by truck. It's going to cost more. And as usual, who's getting screwed? Who always gets screwed? Why, of course, the little guy gets it again and again and again. Get your Vaseline out. It's coming again. They're going to get you over and over and over again. These people do not have a conscience. They have no conscience. George Bush has no conscience. He is totally bereft of conscience and care for the American people. He has not done a damn thing. Nothing. Nothing. Thanks, George, for your compassion. Oh, he lent the oil companies some oil out of our reserves. Why? So they could refine it and make more money. That's why. They were afraid they were going to run out of a little bit of crude there, and they wouldn't have enough to refine if they didn't have enough to refine. You know, we had an oil expert on this show last year. Do you remember what he said? Do you remember what he said when I told him what a bunch of BS it was about not being able to build refineries? They can build refineries, okay, and they can get them permitted. The new energy bill, they greased the skids for building new refineries. Anybody building them? Hell no. Because like the guy said on the program last year, and I know some of you remember this, why should we refine 10 million gallons of gas when we can make the same amount of profit on 5? Why should we do that? Thanks, George. Thanks for your compassion and your help in keeping oil prices at reasonable levels. Thanks for protecting the biggest looters of all, big oil. Again, shame on you. And shame on the oil company executives. And shame on anybody that owns stock in these companies that doesn't make an effort to tell these people running these companies, hey, let's take it easy on the American public for a little while. You think they can't? You think they can't? Greed. Greed. The smash-and-grab administration is grabbing all the bucks they can. I'll give them credit for that. I said something a while back, name me something positive they've done. Well, I'll tell you something positive they've done for themselves. They've wreaked havoc on the American economy, and they've raped and pillaged the American taxpayer for every dollar they could steal from them. No conscience whatsoever. None. God. Let's go back to the phone. Let's talk to John in Fort Myers. Hi, John.
Well, good evening. I'll tell you what, this whole situation makes me really appreciate and be thankful for the preparedness our state had last year when we went through this. It was within hours after the storms cleared that we had help into the areas that needed it.
Oh, I wonder if it had anything to do with the fact that a certain relative...
No, I'm not going to give him credit.
Okay.
For a year after Andrew, and I think up in the Carolinas had storms, we've had people that have been working in our agencies, and these are career people, that have studied this situation, figured out what would need to be done in time of crisis, and got all these things prepared. It takes years to do this, and they've taken years to do this. This governor just happens to be in a spot where we've had people that work very hard to be prepared. Obviously, these other states have not followed the example, haven't paid attention, and they aren't prepared. And you know, it's interesting. I got a little soundbites here. Australia is pledging $10 million to the Red Cross of the United States. The country of Walmart is pledging $15 million. Now, I don't like that company, but if they donate that much, I feel pretty good about that, too.
I'm glad they did.
I watched the president in an interview, of an ABC interview that he did with some lady. So it's on film. Nobody can dispute this. They just can't argue that I'm not telling the truth. She said, "What about the looting?" And he paused for a moment, and he looked at her, and you can just see the wheels turning. There was nothing there. He didn't know what to say. And so he falls back on that old bull crap of, well, I believe in zero tolerance. And this, it had already been established by Tuesday night by Lars Larson and a few of these talking heads that, well, what do we do about looting? Do we just shoot them or what? And it was pretty well established. People that were going in and taking out food and water would get a pass. People taking out stereos and TVs and so forth ought to be shot in their tracks. But the president, zero tolerance.
Yeah.
So this is a man that's benevolent and all this stuff. I finally found out what the Republicans are so afraid of and why these talking heads have been so defensive of the Republican Party and this president and so forth. They've been afraid that something like this was going to happen and show them up for the stupidity that they are.
That's right. I don't disagree.
Yeah, and it's time in this country to quit this my party's better than your party thing. This is a country that we all have to work together. We don't agree on a lot of things, but let's, for God's sakes, have a meeting of the minds so we don't have these kinds of things happen. But we don't. We have the greedy Republicans in there, and you know, I don't see much of the Democrats, so I'm not going to hit the Democrats at all. And the Democrats are doing a poor job. I happened to see Eartha Kitt's interview last week on the Good Morning Show on CBS. And that lady made a remark to Lady Bird Johnson when she was at a dinner there about what was wrong with the youth of this nation. And she said, you're at war in Vietnam, and the youth of this nation don't like it. And she went on and on. And I remember when that happened. And she said on the show, she says, in 2 hours I was out of work in this country. I had to go work in other countries. This is how intimidating these people in Washington and in power are. And it's got to stop.
I couldn't agree.
And I can understand why the Democrats aren't really hitting this president hard, because they're intimidated.
Sure they are.
Absolutely. It's just terrible.
John, I got to move on.
Thanks, sir.
A whole board full.
Thanks
for a very good call. We're going to go to, let's see, down to doing who's waiting the longest here. We're going to go up to Greg in Westport, Connecticut. Hi, Greg, and thanks for being so patient.
No problem, guy. I just wanted to read you something really quick.
Speak up if you can, Greg.
Okay. I just wanted to read you something from the page of the Department of Homeland Security. This goes back to what the previous guest was talking about, and it alludes to that Republican talking point, oh, they should fend for themselves and pull themselves up from their bootstraps. I want to read you just a quick three sentences. It says, in the event of a terrorist attack, natural disaster, or other large-scale emergency, the Department of Homeland Security will assume primary responsibility on March 1st for ensuring that emergency response professionals are prepared for any situation. This will entail providing a coordinated, comprehensive federal response to any large-scale crisis and mounting a swift and effective recovery effort. The new department will also prioritize the important issue of citizen preparedness, educating America's families on how best to prepare their homes for a disaster, and tips for citizens on how to respond in a crisis will be given at Department of Homeland Security.
Well, I'd say this one fits that like a glove, wouldn't you?
I would say so. So my question is, why are the Republicans are so concerned about wasting our tax dollars? Why are we throwing our tax dollars down this rat hole if they're not doing their job?
And I would love, you know, it's probably too late now, but I certainly would have loved for any of our right-wing Republican friends to call in tonight and defend the actions of Michael Chertoff in this horrible disaster.
Well, Michael Brown, too, of FEMA. And, you know, before the last hour, the caller said, well, how could we know about Michael Brown, whether he would be bad? Well, I think we know pretty well, because the thing that he did before, he was the president of the American Arabian Horse Association, from which he was fired. He was more prepared to do the job than you or me. But the one thing he had to his advantage, he was a big Bush donor, so that's why he was given that job.
Well, I don't know, that Arabian horse thing, that's probably a lot of, well, maybe not.
Well, there was a lot of manure there.
Yeah, there you go, that fits right in. Thanks for your call.
Sure.
Good to hear from you. Yes. Where are we going to go here? We're going to go to Juanita in Winter Haven, Florida. Hi.
Hello, guy.
Hello.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the hurricane, and I was going to talk about something else, but I would like to say about the mayor of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Anyway, I saw him on today, and he and that general, Honore, are working together, and they're hopefully the next thing they can do is pick up the dead bodies. And it's that Honore, he's amazing. He went into this place where they had National Guard and police there pointing pistols at the people, and he walks in there and said, put those guns down. And even the police says, it looked like, are we supposed to listen to him?
Yeah, well,
they put their guns down.
He's a leader. That's why.
Right, and he's from the area, and he knows the people, you know. And the people were applauding when he did that.
Certainly.
But anyway, I got tickled at the mayor saying, well, you know, I'm going all out for what I can do. He said, I know the CIA is probably coming after me, but I'm going to do all I can until I can't. And the announcer on there said, I don't know what he means by that.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But anyway, I wanted to say a little something about people leaving. For one thing, you know about the talk about the cars, and then a lot of things, too. Most people are broke before the end of the month, and this happened.
That's right.
At the end of the toward the end of the month.
Sure did.
And another thing, even if you have a car, it doesn't mean you have any place to go.
That's right. Where are you going to stay when you get there?
Right.
And you know, and I don't blame them. A lot of them thought that the levees would hold. They've held before, and you know, it was an impossible situation.
Well, the thing is, too, there's a lot of people that are living by themselves, or you know, they're older, and maybe they're not so swift, you know,
yep.
And they don't hear everything that goes on.
I'm not going to blame those people.
And not
everybody. We need to have to move on. Thank you for your call. Thank
okay.
you so very much.
Okay.
And you know, we've talked about so many things during the program. Can't remember if I talked about it or not. But President Al Gore brought a plane. He didn't fly it in. He didn't pull one of those Bush deals there with his flight suit on. But Al Gore arranged for a plane to come into the New Orleans airport this afternoon and hauled out 150 of the most critical patients and took them back to Tennessee with him. He didn't do it as a stunt. In fact, he didn't announce that he was doing it. Somebody had to tell the press that he was doing it. Didn't make a big photo op out of it, like some people. Not at all. He did it because he's a decent man. Because he cares. He cares about his fellow man. And he arranged to do that. And I want to thank Al Gore for that. I think that's important. And I want to thank a lot of the reporters that have been on the scene this week. I saw some things I did not expect to see. I really did. I saw a lot of reporters that for a change had the sense of moral justice and human decency that reporters need to have now and then. Like the great Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite. I saw some reporters distinguish themselves this week by telling the truth, by looking at a tough situation and not worrying about what was right to say or wrong to say, just told it from their heart, explained what the folks were seeing, didn't try and candy coat it, just said it like it was. I want to thank McCafferty on MSNBC. I want to thank him for being honest and saying it like it was. I even want to thank Shepard Smith. Saw him on Fox when I was at the gym the other day. He's a guy that used to work here locally, and I don't usually laud anything the folks say from Fox, but Shepard Smith was doing his very best to get something done about those people on the bridge the other day. And I want to thank Aaron Brown for doing an exemplary job this week of telling the truth, not trying to philosophize or tell how it should be or spin. We saw the cold, hard truth on the air this week by many. On the other side of the scale, I heard Rush Limbaugh this week. I heard Sean Hannity this week. And in my opinion, they disgraced themselves. In my opinion, they made themselves look like very, very small men. Very small men. They didn't give a damn about humanity. Very small. And that goes for you too, Bill O'Reilly. What little respect I had for those guys, I've lost. Let's go to Juan in Fort Myers. Hi, Juan.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, sure can, Juan.
Okay. I can barely hear you. So let me go ahead and, you know, I think Joe Scarborough did a pretty good job. He's usually to the right.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, and that's unusual. Maybe there's some hope that the major people in the media, maybe they're not fully asleep. Maybe they're just taking a nap.
I think you're right, and I, you know, you're right. I left him out. I should have mentioned Joe Scarborough. That was my mistake. I watched him quite a bit this week, and he did a very, very good job.
Yeah, I like his reporting this time. You know, in Cuba, they in the last 45 years, they have lost less than 30 people in hurricanes, and they had just a category 3 years ago through there. But they started evacuating people about 48 hours ahead of time, and that's something so simple and so inexpensive to do. I don't know why they don't do more of that here. But, you know, it's incredible that, you know, there's 11 million people in the island. This is the length of Florida, and they do such a good job, and we cannot do that job here. You know, regarding the other people on the right that did a terrible job is Lars Larson. He was saying, I could not believe what he said, and he got away with it. People, I guess he screens his calls. He says that the people in New Orleans should have gotten their people out of there in the buses, in the same buses that they take them to the polls in. And that, to me, that was, you know, that was, he says, if they can take them to the polls to vote in buses, why don't they take them out of there? You know, these people, I cannot, you know.
Lousy cheap shot.
Yes, there are people like that in this world, and they're on the radio, but the people that put them in there, and, you know, the owners of the radio stations that put them in there, they should be ashamed of themselves, too, because that's about as un-American as they can be. You know, let me just talk about, just real quick, one last thing. I know it's at the end of the hour. You know, I guess the homosexuals and the ACLU and had a really humdinger of a party last weekend because this hurricane came this way. Well, who was it that said that last time? The guy from Liberty University?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So
exactly
I'm just waiting for him to see whose fault it is now. So,
yeah, he'll pin. Well, I've got a little story here if I can find it. In fact, I should go to it right now. I'm going to. Thank you, Juan, for calling. I'm going to read you a little something here for some of my right-wing friends.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. This is called Repent America. You think the wackies aren't out there, the crazies, our right-wing fundy friends? Listen to this story. Just days before Southern Decadence, an annual homosexual celebration attracting tens of thousands to the French Quarter section of New Orleans. It's an annual event. You all know about it. It's not something I attend, or maybe some of you want to attend. But it's a free country. Hurricane Katrina destroyed the city. Southern Decadence has a history of filling the French Quarter section of the city with drunken homosexuals engaging in sex acts in the public streets and bars. On the official Southern Decadence website, it states that the annual event brought in 125,000 revelers to New Orleans last year, increasing by thousands each year, up over the 50,000 revelers in 1997. Although the loss of lives is deeply saddening, I knew there was going to be a but or an although in there. Although the loss of lives is deeply saddening, this act of God destroyed a wicked city, stated Repent America director Michael Markavich. From Girls Gone Wild to Southern Decadence, New Orleans was a city that had its doors wide open to the public celebration of sin. From the devastation may a city full of righteousness emerge, he continued. New Orleans is also known for its Mardi Gras parties where thousands of drunken men revel in the streets to exchange plastic jewelry for drunken women to expose their breasts. Who would have thought it? This annual event sparked the creation of the Girls Gone Wild video series. We must help and pray for those ravaged by this disaster, but let us not forget that the citizens of New Orleans tolerated and welcomed the wickedness in their city for so long, Markavich said. May this act of God cause us all to think about what we tolerate in our city limits and bring us trembling before the throne of Almighty God. That little bit is not from Jerry Falwell, whom you might expect. Him and Pat Robertson might have said the same thing. But that's from the Repent America director, Michael Markavich. I knew somebody would say that. I knew they would. I knew they would. You know, the time has come for us to wonder, you know, how many people has it been killed in Iraq now? Something like 1,900 right now. And I think we can add several thousand residents of New Orleans to the number of casualties because of Bush's war. That's right, several thousand more casualties of the Iraq war. You know, spin it any way you like, but any fair-minded person is going to have to admit that the lack of troops and equipment right after this disaster were a huge factor in many folks not being able to be saved from these flooding waters. And we must also ask ourselves if this flood would have happened at all if the right amount of money had been spent on the Army Corps of Engineers plans to fix and shore up the levees protecting the New Orleans area. Their budget was cut to pieces in spite of the fact that many experts predicted this exact thing would happen if something were not done. But the money and the National Guard troops, along with a whole lot of their much-needed equipment, were sent on a fool's mission by Junior Bush and Donnie Rumsfeld. And I wonder what it must be like to be a Mississippi or Louisiana National Guardsman stationed in Iraq right now, knowing that they're badly needed at home, and many of them don't even have a home to come back to. This is all one more glaring example of the incompetence of the Bush administration. We're going to talk a lot about that incompetence. We already have. Listen, we're so glad to have you along with us this evening. We had a good show this evening, and that's due to you. Thank you. Good night, Jeff and Andy. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
You've been listening to the Guy James Show, the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer Gene Charles. Production director Johnny Johnson with J2K Productions. Program coordinator Lila St. John. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. This has been the Guy James Show.